night on The Tomorrow Show. Rosie cried cause she didn't know what to wear. That's when you need less, think more, do. Dominique from The Bachelor called in chair whether or not she thought Corinne would sue. Tom Sandoval is a secret astrologer, not looking to marry unless it's a bloody one made of two packets of ketchup, vodka, hot sauce, and lots of fun.
New media, the final frontier. These are the broadcasts of The Tomorrow Show. Its mission? To befriend fellow nocturnals, escapists, and dreamers. Not to mention angry loners, the socially inept, and those with Peter Pan syndrome. To boldly go where no broadcast has gone before. The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. Your overnight broadcast featuring one celebrity boyfriend's midlife crisis, millennials in Star Trek costumes, and so much more. The underdog's best friend. And all you need is a smartphone or access to the internet. Here's the captain of your tomorrow, Kevin Undergaro!
Welcome to The Tomorrow Show. I am not Kevin Undergaro. This is Tomorrow Show, The Next Generation. And I'm about to cry because they're playing Journey. Kevin Undergaro is on the away team. I'm Matt Eisman. I'm sitting in for him. And I requested this song because it is one of my all-time favorite songs. And I'm remembering slow dancing with Nikki Hartman to this song, junior year prom. And I'll tell you what happened later that night. Nothing. Nothing at all. I was making love out of nothing at all. It's air supply. I do love the song. I'm thrilled to be here. I feel like I'm still concerned about Roxy and her meltdown over clothing. So that's going to need to be addressed here. X-Pac, you're back.
Hey.
We have something in common, too. We're going to get into that. Christian, Ashley Daniels.
Hello, sir.
It's so nice. Ashley was saying how thrilled she was to be sitting with three such handsome gentlemen.
I did say that,
but
indeed.
But she said it the way you would say it to, like, a grandpa. Like, isn't he cute? He dressed himself today.
He's just adorable.
It's awesome to be here, guys. I appreciate you having me.
Thank you so much for being here.
This is awesome. I got to say, being in the studio with the man Gria here. Sorry, it said let Steve Perry do his thing. We were talking about this. Some of the great voices in rock and roll, and Christian, we were talking about Mark Slaughter.
Yeah. Very unappreciated from the band
but
Slaughter.
I think Steve Perry is one of those voices. There are certain voices I can listen to sing anything. Michael Bolton was one of them I mentioned. Mark Slaughter.
I was with one of them, in my opinion, Sebastian Bach on Monday
absolutely.
Night.
The prototypical frontman. I said if you were going to start a band, a hair metal band, you would take Sebastian Bach, 6'4", blonde hair, and the voice of an angel. Because when I look at musical genres, I don't know that there are better vocalists than there were in the hair metal era, where I think these guys were operatic. The range they had, the
Jeff
power
T.
they had. Right. I mean, did you see Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which was the greatest premise that he's in a cover, which essentially is Journey's story.
You understand what the premise for that movie is. It was supposed to be about Judas Priest.
Right.
And then they pulled out. We're like, we don't want any part of this. So they had to take all the references out. Because when Rob Halford came out,
right.
the singer Judas Priest, they were like, well,
Rob
we can't
Halford is gay.
Yeah. If the booth wants to pull up pictures of Rob Halford from Judas Priest, just type in Rob Halford, hell bent for leather.
Right.
And then it'll be like, it's like Freddie Mercury. How
right.
did you ever not think he was
How
gay?
Freddie Mercury and Rob Halford, these anthemic rock stars who sang these songs that would be played going into battle, and they really were about.
Freddie Mercury had a song, I Want to Be Free. Come on.
Right.
He really wanted to be free.
Fat bottom girls.
But the.
It's not really the girls he wanted. Those,
well, oh, yeah. It depends on what you're into.
He wanted a bear.
But that movie Rockstar, yeah, so Mark Wahlberg ends up as a guy who's the singer for a tribute band, for the Faith band,
right.
because Judas Priest actually replaced Rob Halford with a singer for a tribute band. Because they couldn't have a gay singer. Because this was the 90s. These kids in here wouldn't understand.
Right.
X-Pac and Matt know what I'm talking
right.
about.
Sure, right.
But the 90s, you couldn't be gay.
And yet you could wear long hair, tight leather pants, and makeup on.
Sure.
But you were a man.
That's right.
I will tell you, actually, I'm glad that Judas Priest wasn't in it. And this may be blasphemy, but I ended up loving the original songs they did as Steel Dragon.
I definitely agree.
We all die young. And they had Mike Matahavich, who was the lead singer of a band called Steelheart that had one hit, Angel Eyes, Never Let You Go, that I remember.
Sing a little bit. I don't know it. What is it?
Angel Eyes. You have angel eyes.
I don't know that song.
Such a smile.
Go over to Sirius XM.
By the way, I know what you're doing, Roxy, but I don't mind singing.
You don't know.
Go over to Sirius XM Channel 39, Hair Nation. Leave it on for about an hour and a half.
But this guy, Mike Matahavich, he has the vocals. And they have a scene in the movie where he's singing We All Die Young. And it's just it's a cappella, just the voice. And you hear the purity of these vocals that I'm so disappointed that grunge came along and wiped hair metal off the face of the earth, because I feel like musically it truly was an enlightened era with incredible music and incredible vocals and songs about love. Like, grunge to me was, I appreciated the songs. I love Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Soundgarden. Chris Cornell was incredible. But they didn't want to be rock stars. They were the anti-rock stars. Yeah. It wasn't joyous. And I felt like it was...
No, because the...
Is this Van Halen? We're going with it all day young.
The hard rock bands of the late 80s and early 90s sang about, you know, partying and getting girls. And as much as I enjoyed the grunge bands, I never tried to kick heroin. So
right.
I couldn't really relate to
By them. By the way, Ashley and Roxy are like, this is like our parents talking about the Charleston.
No.
It was a great dance craze. You don't understand.
Absolutely
You'd shake
not.
Your hips at a woman.
All my boyfriend listens to is hair metal. He went by the name Tommy Guns growing up.
Tommy Guns.
So he told everybody he was Tommy Guns. When that stopped,
How old
he was
is he?
Bobby Blastar. He's 29.
Wow.
Yeah.
So I like this guy
he
already.
He loves hair metal, so I know a little bit about hair metal.
I should have invited Ben Bateman to come with me last night. I was telling Matt before the show, I went out to Ontario and I
saw... Here, you can hear him right here. Mike.
Yeah, there he is.
Yes,
I saw...
That's
my flash from... Sorry, keep going.
I went to see Tesla, Poison, and Def Leppard. Just a great 1-2-3 punch, and... you know, out in the 909, out in Ontario for people in Southern California, you know, hair metal is alive and well.
This is one of the things that I did want to talk about, because I just went to see Billy Joel, speaking of hair metal, at Dodger Stadium. Billy Joel, it is amazing. That guy, I think his last hit was probably like...
River
we didn't
Dreams,
start the fire?
Right.
No, no.
Yeah.
In the middle of the night.
Which was like 92.
92. Yeah.
And
wow.
He's been playing the same song since then, and he sold out Dodger Stadium, and it was a phenomenal show. Axl Rose came out and did Highway to Hell with Billy Joel, which was one of the most... Like, if you told me in 1991... that Billy Joel and Axel would collaborate, you'd think it would have been a murder, something. It was
what
great.
Kind of arrangement, like with guitar, like the guitar.
Billy Joel played guitar while Axel sang, and his voice, you know, it's not what it was.
No, but it's better than it was, say, 5 years ago.
Yeah,
because like before Reunion, Guns
which,
N' Roses.
I wonder
was not
if it's lessons or if it's auto-tune, like real life
technology.
Auto-tune.
Might
be. I think it's technology.
About 5 years ago, I saw him come out with U2 at the Rose Bowl.
Right.
Axl did, and he was not sounding the greatest then. So I agree. I think he's
fat Axl. God bless him.
Yeah.
I will say though, my biggest problem was leaving Dodger Stadium.
Traffic.
Getting home, it took 2.5 hours to get home with Uber. And I'm like, I don't ever want to go to a concert again. And I felt like it ruined it. Like, I'm just
here's
done.
Here's the key. Well, you took Uber. But see, I don't park at Dodger Stadium. I park down the hill by one of the bars. So I walk out of the parking lot and I'm home.
That's what it should have. Because they had the Uber set up there. But the problem is people would get an Uber, not be able to reach it. And then other Ubers couldn't get in. And so my guy was just outside Dodger Stadium. And it took him an hour and a half to get in. And then another 45 minutes just to get out. And I feel like concerts have now been ruined for me in L.A.
Yeah.
Unless it's like here. If like Axl and Billy are playing in the backyard here, and there are 47 people.
I won't go to the Rose Bowl. I don't care who's playing there.
I've become an old man, I realize. It's not worth it anymore.
I
don't do drugs. I don't drink that much, and so it's just not worth it. That was my point, though, with the concerts, was feeling like that unless it's a private show anymore.
Who opens up for Billy Joel these
no
days?
No one opens up for Billy Joel. Billy just comes out.
And how long was the set?
I think he did a little over 2 hours, four-song encore. And, I mean, there must have been 15 songs he didn't play. Just the Way You Are didn't get in. And you're looking at it. Right, I'm with my girlfriend. That's the one song she wanted to hear. I'm like, way to go, Billy. Now I'm not even going to get laid. He didn't hear the song she wanted to hear. And I mean, like, the tickets were like $400 for second section back. Like, you know, I'm 40 rows back, and they're still ridiculous.
How's the house?
It was people loved it. He got him rocking. He knows how to work a crowd.
He is a showman.
Yeah, it was Dodger Stadium sold out.
What do you feel about, like, the average age of a person there? Because I had a bunch of friends
on the
who
young
went.
Side. I think it was kind of two poles, where you have people my age and older who grew up with Billy Joel, and then you have people who are coming as a retro. Look at this old man. He still plays songs I hear on my parents' car. I thought it was good. I thought it was great, but it's...
I'm sad to hear you say, though, that you're not going to go anymore.
It's just I don't like the hassle of it.
Let's be solution-oriented, though. Like, what can we do?
Leave early.
Ooh,
which is,
don't
yeah,
like that.
I mean, it's like I you get it in L.A. why people leave in the fourth quarter of a Lakers game or in the seventh
or
inning.
Or at a Dodger game, people show up in the fourth inning and leave after
because
the seventh.
Because literally, yeah. I had a friend who left just when the encore started, and he was home before the show was over. And again, it took me 2.5 hours.
Maybe drink more mangria, just get drunker and deal with it.
Then I have to pee, and the bathrooms at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
That is positively 60s. They need more pissers there.
Well, they still have a trough in the men's room.
I was going to say, does everyone have to piss in
the
same
entire, thing? The entire concourse isn't just a trough where guys can just kind of dip in,
well,
get us in and out.
If it gets late enough, it kind of acts as
right?
its own concourse, its own trough on the concourse.
It is. This,
yeah.
is. This is the classy stuff. The other thing I want to talk about was something you guys had on was Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah.
And as someone who's in reality TV, I think this could be a real turning moment for reality television. And tell me what you thought, because you guys interviewed Dominique. I thought that was a really interesting interview, and I was surprised she was so talkative about it.
She actually was.
They're not on radio silence. But one of the things, and we saw Corinne had a comment.
Yeah, she essentially came out and said that the first thing she said is, I'm a victim here. She went on to say, this is my worst nightmare and it's happening to me. I don't know, Ash, if you have the exact quotes.
Yeah, I don't have the exact quotes, but I actually think it's interesting that contractually they're now saying that Corinne and all of them sign a waiver basically saying they're not going to sue the
producers. No, you can't. You can sign you any waiver you want, yeah. And that doesn't indemnify
and,
them.
And
really?
Here's the other
bullshit.
Thing.
Wow.
It doesn't matter because it's the bad press that's going to sink them, not the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Who do you guys think Corinne is most angry with?
I think she's probably a little angry with herself. And a little embarrassed. And after that, I think it would be production. And it has nothing to do with him.
And that's exactly my take on it. And that's why I think this is so big for everyone in reality television is that I feel like this is the first time where the contestants are really angry at production, feeling they were violated by them.
Yeah.
In a sense. And I think that for shows that so often rely on alcohol to get the behavior that gets views, these shows have to be quaking in their boots.
Right, but DeMario now is saying that he lost his job over this.
Right.
And he's saying he's just was slandered. I mean, his reputation is slandered. And now, and the flip
well,
side,
honestly,
she,
couldn't
hers
he be
is...
a victim as well? I mean, in the same scenario of these two were both drinking.
Both liquored up, yeah.
They were both probably...
He was damned no matter what Corinne said.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, he's the guy. And you're just going to look at him if you're going to look at any of them.
That's not necessarily true.
That's what people are going to do, though. I mean, that's what you're associated with at this point. He's the guy. It's like, oh, well, they got very graphic with what happened. And it was, you know, not to get too graphic.
Women,
his mouth was on, you know, certain areas of
your
body.
Get just as slammed as men do in this situation. But my confusion here is that take away the production part of this. Say that this was at a bar. She's blacked out. He's blacked out. Say that that's the case. Then what? Then whose fault is it? If they're both consenting adults.
Well, I think we've seen it's the man is still responsible in most of these scenarios. We've seen that, you know, in colleges as they've looked at this.
Even if he is also claiming that he remembers nothing and is completely blacked out.
Right.
So then it is.
Which is you're right. That's a very interesting argument is is I think the natural assumption was she was violated, and that the initial assumption was she was most angry with DeMario. DeMario, is that right?
Yes, right.
But I agree with you. I think she was more felt betrayed by production.
I don't think a prosecutor would touch this. I really don't.
Well, they're going to have cameras, right? I mean, they're going to have video evidence of this.
Yeah, he wants
but,
to see it.
But you're right. I don't know.
Court of public opinion. And
I think it's whether I don't think she's going to go after DeMario. I mean, I don't know. But I think production is really going to be the ones who are targeted. In. Yeah. I mean, that's what it was a field producer who blew the whistle saying she felt that they should have. Or he. I don't know if it was a she or a he.
I believe it was a he. Male producer.
Yeah. Male producer who said that he felt.
Her exact quote, she says, "I am a victim. I've spent the last week trying to make sense of what happened on June 4th. Although I have little memory of that night, something bad obviously took place, which I understand is why production on the show has now been suspended and a producer on the show has filed a complaint against the production. As a woman, this is my worst nightmare, and now it's become my reality. As I pursue the details and facts surrounding the night and the immediate days after, I have retained a group of professionals to ensure that what happened on June 4 comes to light and I can continue my life, including hiring an attorney to obtain justice and seeking therapy to begin dealing with the physical and emotional trauma stemming from the event."
Renowned lawyer Marty Singer, who's also representing Khloe Kardashian and something else right now, and he was affiliated with something with the Bill Cosby case. He's a very, very strong attorney. So.
Right.
I mean, there, I'm sure they're covered too.
So here's something interesting too. We've all been in production and around it. I think it's interesting that this producer came up after the fact rather than intervening when they saw a situation that clearly made them uncomfortable. And I think it's tough because you know the hierarchy when you're on a set. And yeah. If you're a producer, your job is to produce and keep your mouth shut and get footage. But I think it's interesting that this person didn't intervene and then had this crisis of conscience and after the fact raise the red flag, which
I know that they for sure were on set and didn't try to intervene. Maybe they did try to intervene, or maybe they weren't on set and they were looking at footage and it was another producer that was there that day and that's why they left.
Could have been.
I just don't know. I still feel like we don't know enough. Right. We still don't have the details.
But that's what we love to do.
That's right. Yeah.
Jump to judgment.
Well, what other?
That's what we do.
Interesting part of the angle brought up in our chat by our own R. Melvin fan, great fan of The Tomorrow Show. And if you're watching on YouTube, join us in the chat. Pointed out, of course, that DeMario's black. So that, of course, brings a whole separate area. It's a whole separate part of the conversation into this. So I think. Well, I don't know. Let me ask what you think. What do you think production should do in terms of – not even production. What do you think the network should do? I would cut ties.
I think the network did what they had to do, which is pull the show. Now, they haven't canceled it yet. I mean, I think – which also is judicious because, again, without knowing all the facts – this is something I will say absent this situation, and I do not want to say this with sexual assault, but with anything that goes on, I do appreciate that people can wait to get all the facts before they make a judgment. As people who are in entertainment, I think we all know we've been in situations that can be taken out of context or misconstrued. And you don't want to lose your job in a situation where people don't have all the information, because a lot of times you're powerless.
I've had to deal with that, Matt.
Right. Where you know, of course, right. Yeah. And so what was your experience going through something that's being dragged out in public and now with social media is being tried and people are reaching a verdict in not days, not hours, but seconds.
I had to try to understand that, like, if I was looking at it from the outside looking in, I would give the benefit of the doubt to the accuser, to the lady. I just would.
Sean, I think that's a really good comparison too, because in this case, she has been very sexually promiscuous on the show, and she has been very open about that. So I think a lot of people jump to the conclusion that she must have been partially in the wrong here. And of course, those two things don't translate, and yours didn't either. But I think that it is a similar situation.
But you know, when being in that position, I just had. Took the hit and tried to do the best I could to convince everyone. I had to go, Opie and Anthony one time, and it was a big mess. But and even then, people, once they hear, hey, this person did that, oh, come on.
What happened on Opie and Anthony?
Oh, it was my act with China.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Right. I actually heard that interview.
Yeah.
When you were in there.
Yeah.
And what's hard is.
I regret a lot of that. And obviously now, I feel badly about some of the things that were said, but it was all true. I was just trying to defend myself,
And that's what's hard too. I think
It really is hard because I don't think people seek context. I don't think people say, and one of the things you see is, if true, this is horrible.
Yeah.
Which means people are passing judgment, not knowing whether something is true or not. And I think, look, we're all guilty of it. We see something on social media, you retweet it, you comment on it. And I just think now that we're much more, there's a rush to be first rather than to be right. And I think it's such a difficult, because I don't see it reversing. I see, as Ashley's online right now, you see the immediacy of it, that with part of the information or one person's side of the story and something, and I see the pressure on a network to say, we can sit here and we can take bullets for a week, or we can distance ourselves from this show or this talent. And I think it's a scary time to be a performer, to be someone where you create, you want to take risks, where you're on talking about something and you realize people may take it out of context, and that the price can be not maybe your career, but certainly
a big giant hit.
Yeah. What do you think we should do moving forward?
Well, it's not going to change. I wish people would try to wait to pass judgment, try to get more information. I think that, but the nature of the immediacy of information and our ability.
Megan recently, Matt, you know,
that's what I thought you were talking
about.
No,
that's just another one. Right. So like, you know, there's been a few things in my life where things were said about me that just were absolutely not true. But I still couldn't blame people for believing that.
So Ari Shaffir, a comic who I've known for decades, we started together, and he had an incident on his special where he talked about someone in not a flattering fashion and used their name. And he was getting crucified. And he said one of the things he did was he took his phone and he put it down and walked away. And I think one of the hard things to do is to, when you pick up your phone, you're subjecting yourselves to this brunt of social media, and you know how people will say things on social media.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you won't search it up, but when they at mention you and tell you what an awful person you are or how bad you are, one of the things I think is just trying to not get caught up in it, because I think and you tell me how it was, you're seeing your name being dragged through the mud. I'm sure you want to engage these people and respond.
And I did here and there.
Right.
You know, and
you're human.
Yeah. But I knew there was nothing I could do about it but what I was already doing.
Right.
And you just take it. It's part of being in the public eye.
Right.
Has that ever happened to you, Matt?
Not yet. But I realize, again, and I am, you know, I do stand-up comedy, and I'm very non-controversial. My first shows were with my grandma in the crowd. I always imagine she's there. But I've seen a lot of friends do this, a lot of comedians who, even Kathy Griffin. And when I look at what she did, could she have seen the consequences? Sure. But I much prefer to see people, entertainers, be given the benefit of the doubt in this entertainment and people trying to make a joke, rather than people, I think, look for the worst intentions. And I think that's part of the responsibility now as entertainers, is rather than looking to entertain or to be comedic, you have to now try to say, how could this be taken in a different context? And what do you have to lose? And I look at...
Does it make you gun shy on stage?
I've always tried to be non-controversial. I make my living on a show, American Ninja Warrior. I'm on the Hallmark Channel. I know where my audience is, and the fact that most of them are going to be, in terms of where the line can be drawn, much more on the conservative side. Naturally, I love entertainers like Doug Stanhope, a guy who will talk about the most taboo subjects and make you laugh. And I love those entertainers. And I feel, to me, no subject should be off limits. And I truly mean no subject. I've had cancer. I have rheumatoid arthritis. I love jokes about that. I love people being able to laugh about it, to laugh about any subject at all. I think that's one of the ways we deal with difficult topics, is through humor. And
a lot
I think
rheumatoid arthritis jokes come at you.
So I do an hour on dealing with rheumatoid arthritis and kind of my problems with it. And the point is, and whatever the topic, I think that people take their reactions off of you. So when I had cancer in 2007, I had a tumor on my kidney that was malignant, and I chose to laugh about it and always try to take the humorous side, because the other alternative is being
crying,
morbid, and crying. And I just feel like I think we're getting to the point where now people, And it's often everything's funny unless it's personal to you. And that's always difficult too, where you know, you laugh at someone else's misfortune,
yes.
But when it's your misfortune, you don't have that same sense of humor. And that's one of the challenges, is that thing of if we want to live in this society where of non-bullying and no, where we try not to offend anybody, I think we lose a lot of our ability to communicate and to relate. And I think that most of us can laugh about our situations, and you know, when you're in the middle of it can be hard to do it. I think it's an interesting time now where we're all trying to be more sensitive towards one another and towards particular topics. But I also think that as performers and as people who make our living expressing ideas, it's also concerning to think that, you know, you could be saying something. Elizabeth Banks, did you see she was talking about directors and she was trying to point out there weren't enough women in film. And inadvertently, I think she slighted people of color by not mentioning the color purple. And it was a difficult situation because you see both sides of it. Here's a woman who's trying to fight for women, and at the same time, people of color really felt that what she said was completely insensitive and marginalizing. And it's difficult when you hear someone who's trying to take a stand to advance the cause of women and ends up offending somebody, and you're like, wow, it's hard because you feel like someone's heart was probably in the right place, but at the same time makes an ignorant statement.
Very misguided to go after Steven Spielberg of all people. You know, I mean, I don't think he strikes us as the movie going public as somebody who's, you know, not compassionate. And he's cast some great female parts, you know, like Marion Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know, she's right up there.
He made a movie about aliens.
Does it scare you at all? Because you are a comedian and you see how so quickly somebody can just be, that the backlash can just start and it's like everybody just jumps the bandwagon.
I went on Greg Gutfeld. I went on his show and I was even concerned going on the show because it's on Fox News and that some people, look, I was on Apprentice and people were protesting, not me directly, they were protesting the show because of the executive producer.
And right, and you weren't even on with Donald, you were on.
We weren't
Donald.
On. He was EP in name, and everyone, you know, the show was distancing itself from him. And at the point when we were filming, he was one of 16 people looking for the primary. Nobody gave him a shot. But then when the show airs, he's the president, and people were protesting it. And you feel some people are saying, "How can you endorse this man?" And you're like, I went on this show for charity. I went on with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I didn't think there was going to be an affiliation with the man who's president. And you also say that it's the whole point of the show. Well, the point of the show is entertainment, but you know, I ended up raising nearly $1 million for my charity. Like this is one of the few shows where you're actually doing some good, some tangible good. But it's hard. People get very upset. And I think that it's a time when we're getting so much more open and progressive in certain areas. And yet so much more, I think, regressive in how we approach ideas or people with different ideas. And it's an amazing time. It's a very interesting time. I just feel like as entertainers, as people on shows, like I look at any show on Apprentice, they had alcohol around all the time. Now we were always busy, so there wasn't a lot of drinking, but
what do you mean they had alcohol around?
On set. So on set,
like
you know, whenever
services?
We were in the war room, well, in the, it, you know, there's craft services, but then there's a set where we have food that is part of our area, the war room, where they would always have alcohol available. And most any place we went, if there was kind of an enclosed space, there would be alcohol available because, look, everyone knows alcohol leads to poor judgment, which leads to drama, which leads to ratings.
TV, yeah.
We were never encouraged to drink. We were never pointed out or told it's there, but it was made available. And, you know, I think there are different shows where I know that some of the people on Bachelor also know being straight-laced doesn't get you eyeballs. It doesn't get you the cover of Us magazine. A lot of the guys, I remember I've watched, I shouldn't say this because Bachelorette airs opposite Ninja Warrior, but I've seen some of the episodes and some of the guys clearly
afterwards.
Were getting drunk afterwards.
Yeah, everyone should
DVR.
Watch Ninja Warrior
right.
live.
Right.
And then, you know, like a week later, they can watch
I was over at a friend's house and his wife was not going to watch Ninja Warrior.
Matt,
so.
when the person that acts like the biggest fool gets the most airtime and they're acting like a fool because they're liquored up or pilled up or whatever,
right.
It's kind of, It is encouraging.
We reinforce the bad behavior. Yes.
Well,
we do.
Wasn't Snooki on your season?
Snooki was on our season.
How is that? I mean, she wasn't there long.
And this is what's interesting. Obviously, she became famous as the party girl on Jersey Shore. She was punched in the face in a bar
in the
first season.
Kevin Undergaro and I did the after show for that for AfterBuzz TV. Right. We remember her very well.
But now she's a mother of two. She has five or six different internet businesses. She's trying to become like a fitness. She's trying to get herself in shape. And it's hard for her. Like she went by Nicole Polizzi, but people call her and you know, her Instagram, I think, is still Snooki. So she still knows where most people know her from. But I think it can be hard to shake that. Non-apprentice, she was completely drama free. Probably in fact, to the point where we all know why people watch reality TV, and a lot of times it's not for good behavior. Ninja Warrior is a great show in that it's one of the few shows where it is a very earnest show, but we go up against The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, and they tend to get better ratings. And a lot of time, who was it? Chad last season?
A couple seasons ago,
where, you know, these bad behaving people are the ones who people tune into. And when they go away, you see the social media chatter drop, and it's, you know, I don't think we'd like to admit it. I don't think we all like to say we aspire to see the better side in people. And yet we don't turn away from a train wreck.
That's right.
Well, that point that you're making about getting
known. I'm sorry, you disagree? Or
no,
you,
I don't disagree.
Or don't disagree, right.
That point you're making about getting known sort of as a notorious person is a perfect transition to our guest, Allison Arngrim,
right,
who was known as Nellie Olson, who, as in her book, she refers to as being the prairie bitch.
Yeah.
And she's actually going to be with us in mere minutes, actually. As soon as we take a break, we'll be able to turn everything over.
And what's amazing, too, and we'll talk about this with her, though, is to talk about the reach her show had back then. People can't understand what it was like when there were three channels.
We were talking about exactly that beforehand. Roxy was trying to just talk about the level of fame would have been done with it.
And as somebody today, compare her.
And I'm like, you can't, because there were only those three channels. So if you were on a primetime network show, it was like you were like five celebrities today in terms of
40 million, 50 million people.
How big?
I mean, like a Justin Bieber, if not bigger, but bigger in the sense that it wasn't just popular with kids. It's everyone is watching it because there are three channels. I mean, MASH, I think it got a 57 share for its finale.
It got Super Bowl numbers.
Super Bowl numbers. Yeah. Like if you know, it's remarkable being on broadcast TV right now because more people are consuming media than ever. But there are so many different outlets that the numbers on everything are dropping dramatically. You look at American Idol's coming back. And it used to get, I think it was getting around a 30 share. And now I think they'd be happy with a 5 share.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, shows would have been canceled after half. They probably would have canceled it midway through 15, 20 years ago.
After the top 10, if you look for the week, the ratings for the shows like 11 through 30, you're like, oh, those all would have been canceled probably even 10 years ago, definitely 20 years ago.
It's a really interesting time to be in entertainment too, because you look at it, there's so many more opportunities, but it's so hard to break through. And if you have something on, to maintain an audience. And I look at shows, I don't know, Netflix is incredible. How a show will come out and people will work on it for 6 months, 9 months, and people will consume it in a day and a half and be, now what?
I've done that.
And then when it comes back 9 months later, a year later, how do you get people interested again? Because they've all moved on. And you can consume a show and it's not a year or 9 months. It's a matter of days or weeks for most people to consume a show, and you're on to the next thing. And we're all looking for these bingeable shows. And it's just, I see it where on NBC, they have no idea what to do with digital. They don't know really how to try to draw more audience, because people under 27 don't watch TV. They watch their phones, they watch their iPads, or they stream it to TV.
That's why they're doing the YouTube thing now, the YouTube TV. Have you heard about this?
Well, it's interesting, too.
I have it. It's amazing.
But you look at it, and I think that, you know, it's going to be something like this, because they've tried to take Insta stars, Vine stars, and put them on TV, but their audience doesn't follow them.
It's not the,
But this is unlimited DVR as well. I can I can tape as many things as I want and never
Well, you're not really taping them, right? It's just on demand. I mean, essentially,
you're
right?
You can tape them because you can watch it right afterwards.
But I mean, is it downloading to your hard drive or is it in the cloud?
It's so in the cloud of
effectively,
the
it's on demand, right? I mean, it's just they're retaining these broadcasts and then you can watch it, which it's they call it a DVR just because that's this archaic notion of something that sits on your desk or your TV top and records it, but everything's going to be in the cloud. And
that's why cable's so cheap now. They're trying to give it away, practically.
Right.
They call me once a week. I'm like, I don't want you.
So, and DirecTV, I just caught them trying to, they just, I had the protection plan that was like $7 a month, and they upgraded it to $25. And they're like, now we insure all your TVs and laptops. I'm like, I don't want you, I never asked for that. I found out I'd had it on my bill for a year and hadn't known.
What?
I know, I'm calling DirecTV out. I was so pissed. I didn't check my bill. It just went up, and I thought it was Sunday ticket. I keep throwing my pen, by the way. This is why I'm not a ninja.
What'd that pen ever do to you?
I know. I'm terrible with it.
It's just because you're a Letterman fan. Yeah, you used to always throw behind him.
People don't know Letterman. We might as well, right?
Letterman. But on that note, we do need to take a break because we got to get our guest in here.
Oh, wait. Is she here?
Right, she is here.
Yeah, let's cut to commercial.
We'll be back. Make it so. That song, it can only mean one thing. I'm hungry and I'm getting moody. It's actually in honor of our guest, and we're all excited to have her here. You knew her as Nellie Olson on Little House in the Prairie. Allison Arngrim, welcome to the Tomorrow Show.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So we were already talking about you before we got here, and just trying to explain to Roxy and Ashley, who weren't around back when your show was on, when there were only three channels.
Yes, yes, and you had to get up off the couch and walk across the room to change them.
But trying to explain how many people would tune into your show and what it must have been like for you. I mean, Little House on the Prairie was a phenomenon. Was it seven seasons, eight seasons?
It was a total of nine. It was seven seasons as Little House on the Prairie and then two more as Little House, A New Beginning. I was in 1 through 7, and then I left and came back for season 9.
So,
for the hell of it.
Wow.
What was it like? Could you go out in public without being recognized?
Yes, because, once again, so it was only three channels, and there was no internet, and they weren't reading about me on Twitter. Certain people watched it, like 40 million, like in a pop. But I wasn't real recognizable off the show because I didn't have
the wig.
The wig. The
okay, so maybe not quite. Well, Justin Bieber, if he's not without his shirt. I was trying to explain to them, though, 40 million people watching a show. Right now, I think the Super Bowl gets that. The Oscars didn't get it.
No,
I don't know that anything
now
gets 40 million.
It's basically the Super Bowl, though. Yeah.
But if you told them who you played, they were like,
I got recognized by voice a lot, and I still do because, well, I sound like me.
Awesome.
I would go out. It's like, it was more like, you know, being Spock and going out without your ears because people so expected me to be in the 1800s clothes and the wig. They would like, you look like a normal girl.
Right.
Yeah, I look like that. So they didn't. I get recognized more now because people are more aware of like what people on TV look
like.
And they've seen me on talk shows with the short hair. So they go, oh my God, it's Allison Arngrim. And it's Nellie Olson. And then the voice. I've been recognized over the phone, which is hilarious.
You're kidding.
I'm like on the phone with a credit card or airline. And they're like, I hate to ask this, but were you Nellie Olson?
Oh my God. So here was my question, because I remember watching Little House on the Prairie, and it's an amazing show.
Thank you. It is
one of the warmest
really
shows.
Good.
It has some of the best messages. I remember like talking about a dog passing away, and Michael Landon felt like everybody's father. So you're on this show, one of the most beloved shows in television history. It's still on Hallmark Channel.
Oh, gosh, was it Cozy TV now? It's on every... Well, because now there's 20 million platforms to watch it on. So, yes, you can watch
it
on everything.
What was it like on this beloved show that you were, as you call it, the bitch? How is that? And particularly when you're How old are you when you get cast? 11?
Yeah, 11, 12. Yeah.
How is it going out there and now being known as the bitch?
That was weird because everybody on the show is so nice. And I'm on like the nicest show in the world playing the worst person in the world, which did make it a little difficult. But that kind of made it work. I've had a lot of people say the show was like too nice. If I hadn't been on it, they couldn't have watched the thing. It was weird because, like I said, back then people took things rather seriously and they kind of like thought I was like that and were terrified of me. And some people are still are. They still are. There's some people are still afraid of me. I did. I only went out in costume once, and my father said it was a bad idea, but it was a charity event. We said, okay. And the woman who played, Catherine McGregor, played Mrs. Olsen, went, and they loaned us the costumes and the wigs. And I got kicked in the butt and knocked to the pavement. Nobody wanted her autograph. They were just terrified. She was making little children cry because they saw Mrs. Olsen. It was horrible. I was in a parade. In about like 78, the Hollywood Santa Claus Lane Christmas parade, and I someone threw a cup of McDonald's orange soda at my face and direct hit, and the car was moving. Really good aim.
When you were like, a little kid?
I was like 16, but like right in the face with a cup of soda.
How is it though? And we've seen this, you know, the plight of the child star.
Yes.
And how is it growing up on television so recognizable? I know your parents were in entertainment as well. Did that shield you, or how is it trying to be normal?
That helped because, you know, that's the thing, is because I had been on TV and I knew people on TV, I knew it was acting and I liked villains, and so I knew I was playing the villain, so I was actually rather proud of the fact that people, I was like, so I didn't really mind that, and thank God I had some fantasy reality separation, because, you know, my mother was Casper the Friendly Ghost and Gumby, so I knew my mother wasn't a talking green ball.
So she had a recognizable voice as well.
Exactly. Nobody knew who she was. They knew the voice. So
she was Gumby?
My mother was Gumby.
You're kidding me.
And she was Sweet Polly, purebred underdog's girlfriend.
No.
And Davy of Davy and Goliath.
Did you used to make her go around and talk to you like that?
I didn't care.
Gumby.
But my friends said, she would walk me to school. My friends go, yeah, do Gumby, do Casper. Hi, I'm Casper, the friendly. And then when I got to be my 20s, all the college kids were like, oh my God, do the voice. So yeah. She was not really a ghost or clay or a small dog. So I knew that people went on TV. So I knew I wasn't really Nellie Olson. It was fine by me. My friends, and I stayed in the regular school that I'd been going to for years. So I had my old friends and they knew who I was. Mm-hmm. But strangers, that was really weird. I mean, luckily I think it's funny. But even to this day, my friends, really, it's really difficult to be my friend because people will say, oh, you know her, your friend, why are you friends with her? And what's she like? And just be really weird.
It's amazing. People have difficulty separating the actor from the character.
Completely. People hate me.
You did a phenomenal job. I mean, it really was. Nellie was such a good character, but I feel like she did have a redemptive arc. And I remember the episodes with Percival when she found love. And I was watching in preparation. And you had one of the funniest lines when you were opening the restaurant and he ends up dumping the eggs on your head and he yells, it's like, you're a beautiful woman, but you're horrible. You treat people badly and you don't need a restaurant to find a husband.
Pretty.
But you had, that was it.
Right.
It was, I mean.
She was just there.
The comedy timing on that.
I was lonely.
You were very, and you got into comedy after the show.
Yes, I was like 15 and a half. I started doing stand-up comedy, the Comedy Store and the Improv, and then what became the Laugh Factory. And I still do it. Now I have a whole one-woman show. I go all over the world with a whole thing of telling real stories called Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. I'm very proud. And a big Q&A section because everybody wants to ask me weird stuff. So I incorporated that into the show. I have cards that say Ask Allison Anything.
What's the weirdest question people ask?
Oh, my God. It's like not even repeatable. People ask weird stuff. Okay. I always say there's like this.
Because Ashley has some weird questions ready to go.
Right. Because there's questions I get over and over again to the point I came up with this like rant of, are you really a bitch? Was that really your hair? What was Michael Landa really like? Are you and Melissa Gilbert really friends? Where did you film the show? What's your favorite episode? How much did you get paid? Do you still get received? Is Albert gay? What the hell is wrong with Baby Carrie?
Oh, that's all my questions.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
Throw them out.
You get those things.
Biff Tannen, Tom. I'm blocking
Thomas Wilson.
Thomas Wilson. Yeah. He does a whole song about it, about kind of trying to separate himself from
the
character.
Yes, because he got people hate him.
Yeah. Just for our audience, we're talking about Biff from Back to the Future.
Yeah. Yes, oh, he was wonderful. Biff Very Tannen. Evil. Yeah. People hate him. Yes.
I feel like we have to get some of the weird ones, though. You don't remember any of
those?
It doesn't
have to be the most vile offensive, but what are some
weird
ones?
Oh, yeah, because we do get a lot of, like, who did you have sex with on the show?
That's on my list, but you don't have to answer
that. There's a lot of sex questions.
Oh, my God.
A lot of people that. Yeah, right? They're pervert.
But did you? Did you have sex with anyone?
Is it usually about the show, the weird questions?
Some of those, they will get into, like, okay, in the episode where it gets kind of like, well, Trekkian, you know, they start going, so in the episode in the season three, when the thing, and you were eating the cinnamon chicken with the thing, and then we're like, oh, my God, okay. Yeah, so some people are a little into it. A lot of people, again, the thinking it's real, they want to know where the buildings are, where the town is. And I have to explain, okay, if you want Walnut Grove, like actual Walnut Grove where Laura lived, you can go to Minnesota and go to Walnut Grove, the real town of Walnut Grove, which is still there, and they have a museum, and Laura was there, and there's lots of cool stuff. Or you can go out to Simi Valley, to Big Sky Ranch, where we filmed it, and the buildings are all gone. They went bye-bye because it was a set. But you can see the beautiful hill where baby Carrie fell down and the trees, and it's lovely. But that's it, because it wasn't real. There is not, in fact, actually a little town where we shot it still in existence.
I have a question. This is kind of random, but your character kind of reminded me of one of my favorite movies, The Bad Seed, Patty McCormick's
Rhoda. Thank you so much.
And obviously that was made before Little House on the Prairie. Yes. So did she inspire you at
Big role model. I grew up watching that.
Oh, my God, this is
my
awesome.
My friend Chrissy Norton and I would have slumber parties, because back in the day you couldn't tape the show. You had to be there when it was on.
Right.
So like at 2 a.m. Saturday night late movies, they would show The Bad Seed. And we would know this. And Chrissy would have a slumber party. And we would braid our hair and put on party dresses and tap shoes.
Okay, and you just made my life.
Ashley and Roxy have their Saturday night plans.
And watch. Oh, and it was like Rocky Horror for children. We would sit there and watch and like yell stuff out and go like, you gave me her a basket of kisses. We're like way into it. So absolutely, no. When I started doing LA, I went, ooh, this is very Bad Seed. And I later have met Patty McCormick, and she is lovely.
You're
and I
kidding
adore
me. When did you meet her?
Oh, gosh, ages ago. And we actually did a photo shoot for a magazine together, which was fun. And I also know Julie Dawn Cole, who was Veruca in the first.
Oh, Willy Wonka. Wow.
I wanted all
the great bitches.
Yes. The one with the pink macaroons and 1,000 balloons. Yes, her. I wanted all of daddy. Yes, she's lovely. She's also really, really nice, and everyone's terrified of her. So
that's awesome. That is awesome.
So, yeah, no, we've tried to hook up. All of us bitches have tried to hook up, make sure we know each other.
But seriously, how did you meet, though?
Well, luckily, I mean, Patty McCormick, there was an autograph show initially. I met her. Julie Dawn, I actually met because I have a lot of British friends, and I have a British friend, and he actually lives in southern England, and he somehow met her. And he one day he met and said, how do you two not know each other?
Oh,
wow. And so he
you
introduced
have to.
Us. And so, I brought her macaroons.
Not only Britain, though, but France. Yes. I understand you're huge in France. You speak French.
I do your
show in French. How did... Did you always study French growing
See,
up?
See, that's what I was saying. Well, you must have spoken French. No, I'm crazy. I decided to do a show in French when I didn't speak French.
You're
and
kidding.
Had to go learn.
So are you fluent, or do you just, is it like ABBA, where you just you do this phonetically, where they had no idea what they were singing? It was just sound.
It almost started like that. I did a movie in France, and I'd done a couple talk shows there, and I found out, as I like to say, they don't think Nellie Olson's mean, they think she's French. seems like a nice girl to me. So I started going there, and I found out the French love me. So Patrick Lebatia said, we can do a show in French, but we kind of have to learn French, and we have to do an adaptation because some of the things, they don't know what you're talking about. It's only American stuff and other stuff that totally works in French. So he created this thing, and the first couple times I did it, it was terrible. I had to have like a prompter in my ear, and it was all I could do to learn.
God.
It was brutal. I had to know what I was saying, cause you got to know what the jokes are.
Right.
So you couldn't completely do it phonetically. You had to know it. But then I grew more and more, and then I went back to school, and I learned French, and I do the show. And now I do a second show. We had Confession d'une Garce, and now we have Le Mal au Trésor de Nellie Olson, which I'm doing three times in September, twice in France and once in Belgium.
So wait, Juliet, who speaks French here?
Juliet.
Yeah,
so.
Bonjour.
Juliet. Bonjour, Juliet in the booth.
Bonjour. Ah, merci. Oui, je fais le spectacle en français maintenant. C'est très difficile pour un Américain.
Ben bravo, vous devrez être très fier.
Sean, do you feel like I feel like a cretin here. I don't get any of the French. I only know voulez-vous coucher avec moi.
Which
is
right,
which
that's
is
it.
Weird
yeah.
Because if you're saying coucher, then shouldn't it be toi? because that's rather personal. Vous is formal or plural. So if you're saying voulez-vous coucher avec moi,
I'm being taught French by Nelly. This is amazing.
You're asking multiple people to, would they like to go to bed with you.
Well, yes,
yeah,
that is
saying,
true.
Would all of you like to go to bed with me, or would you formal person?
That's very
70s. Like, yeah.
That's
right,
very
70s. Yeah, it's, yeah.
You don't know who he's asking to go to bed with.
It could be.
So I grew up, television is my church. I loved watching it. And I was fascinated. So you have a friendship now with William Shatner.
This is the kookiest thing. I met him just once in person, like at the TV Land Awards. So I don't really know him. He's a lovely man. But I was on Twitter and I followed him, and he's very funny. He says great things on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he's one day just started saying things about Nellie Olson and Little House on the Prairie, sort of like out of nowhere. And it was really funny. And I'm like, Shatner just tweeted something, Nellie, and so we said, and then we start going back and forth, and then he said something about my birthday coming up. Well, I didn't have my blue check yet; I wasn't verified, and my publicist said, "Oh yeah, yeah, I got a call." So, and I didn't get verified for the longest time. People said, "Why aren't you verified?" And I said, "Oh, fine, you know who I am. Forget right. I." And then I wake up one morning and I have a blue check. I'm verified. And I said, for some bizarre reason, they verified me. And that's when William Shatner said, "No, not bizarre. Happy birthday. You're welcome."
No.
Got my blue check. So I said, James Tiberius Kirk just got Nellie Olson verified on Twitter. This is like a thing that just happened. So it totally
these were shows
out.
From the 70s, Roxy. The this what
well,
she
you're
is
dressed
speaking.
Up in Star Trek wear.
Excuse me,
know.
I did the Star Trek binge. Why? I have done.
So he's really cool, and he retweets me sometimes, and we respond to each other, and I retweet him, and we have some mutual fans and say funny things, and it's just kind of nutty and crazy. I did immediately, of course, tweet. I was like, hey, check it out, because I'm going out of the Star Trek.
You get a
shirt.
Kick out of it. Well, so what's amazing to me is, again, because there weren't many shows back then, how much interaction did you have with other shows that were on in this, you know?
Some, because there were like NBC affiliate parties and press events, and oh, everybody went to Toys for Tots,
right.
And everybody went to the parade, and everybody went to these things, so you'd see people at stuff. And then on the Paramount lot, where we were for the first couple of years.
Uh-huh. Right off Melrose,
Okay. Yeah, Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley and all that was there.
God.
So we used to see those guys in the commissary and run into them and stuff. So there were certain shows
I feel like it's like the Bilderberg group, like just this small group of people that ran entertainment.
And back then it was. It was like this. There were only so many shows on because they're three channels, and you saw people from your network, you know, you do that kind of thing. Now it's like, you know, what are you on? I'm on Hulu. I did
yeah.
You, what?
People
yeah,
don't so even know what network a show is on. They just
yeah,
DVR
it's just
it.
There.
Or,
it's just on
they
your
don't know
phone.
What time it's on, what day it's on, what
because it doesn't
it's
matter because it's always on.
Exactly.
Which
it's
is kind of cool.
You now,
Little
you were
House is now always on.
You were talking about the people you'd run into, you know, at the commissary on the lot. Mm-hmm. Did you actually get to know them, or it was just passing acquaintances?
Sometimes just passing. Henry Winkler was sort of chatty, you know, with him. And there were some people we saw all the time, and then some people kind of passing through. And
would you be in the wig and the
right? Well,
the dress?
I would be at lunchtime. I would have the wig and my tights and my little high boots, and then like cut off shorts over that and a T-shirt over that because
right.
I didn't dare eat in the clothes. And then the wig. So it was all
they
wrong.
Won't let me eat in my wardrobe.
I'm not allowed to eat in my wardrobe.
Yeah.
No.
I'm a
it's
slob.
Bad. It's, yeah.
So here's the other thing that I was really jealous about. Christian, yes. And I think Sean appreciate this. You were on both The Love Boat and Fantasy Island.
I just talked to a nice man the other day. They're doing a book about Love Boat, and I got to relive all those memories and everything. Yes, I was on – it's like a court-ordered program. It's the law. You're on a show in the 70s, you have to be in Fantasy Island and Love Boat. So I did them both. Love Boat was more fun. I did not get to go out on the boat. They only took the boat out like twice a year, and then it was like charo, you know. So
right.
I
but
did
when
the
you
thing.
Were on, Tony Tennille of Captain and Tennille was on
yes!
the episode.
And
yes,
and she was delightful. And she told funny stories about the captain and played the ukulele. so I got to hang. But Nancy Culp played my aunt. Nancy Culp.
Mrs. Hathaway.
Mrs. Hathaway.
Yeah.
She played my aunt Gert, and she was the greatest person like in the world ever. And I was so happy.
But you were playing. You were essentially playing your this child
bitch.
Actor.
Again,
although it was kind of inverted because. Because you were a sweet person on your show, but
yes.
you were a bitch in real
yes.
life.
I was a girl who was a bitch in real life who was playing out there. I go, hi, Captain. I'm like, oh, so happy. And then I'm like, get any of these people away from me. I'm just this like schizo, like crazy.
So what was it for you when you went on that show? Was it an event or was it just a gig for you?
No, it was great because Jill Whalen got me the job. Uh-huh. That's what's so fun. She was going to school Captain Stubbing's daughter there, with Melissa Gilbert at, like, Buckley, where they went to school. And they had a meeting, and she said, oh, you have this episode coming up with the, well, you have to get Allison Arngrim, because she's friends with my friend Melissa, and she's really fun. And besides, I mean, come on, it's the bitchy girl. You got to get Nellie Olson. They were like, oh, that's a good idea. So she technically got me the job, so I'm very grateful to her. And she wanted, she was like, oh, this will be great. I'll have Allison hitting me with pies, and this will be fun. So we did. We had a blast. We had an absolute blast.
It was really so kind fun. Of sweet, though, in the end, that you guys became friends.
She feels bad for me, because I'm miserable.
So here is the other thing that I'm a little embarrassed to admit. I didn't realize when I was growing up, Nellie Olson was the bitch. But I was watching this episode. You're stunning.
So beautiful.
So beautiful. Yes. And you still look fantastic. But I didn't realize that you know, because of your character's personality.
My personality you were, that ruined it
you
all.
You were gorgeous.
I was cute. I was. I had big blue eyes, nose. So yeah, I was a cute little
and then
monster.
Fantasy Island. I don't remember the episode of Fantasy Island. Weird. What happened? So did you ever see Fantasy Island, Roxy?
Kevin has us watch a little bit. Because
it sounds like it was always fun, but it was always, but Tattoo, this is the most dangerous fantasy we've ever
heard. Right.
It was always dark.
Terrible things.
So what was your
and
fantasy?
It was really hard because it was like right after the strike and they were filming two episodes at once and I had to work like 17-hour days. And so it was also like a drag.
Right.
So there was that. And I was
Where
wearing,
did that film?
That was, I just got thrown by my pimp through a doorway. So
good for you.
I hate when that happens.
I believe it was 20th. Yeah. Oh, this is good. This is okay. So Eve Plum, Jan Brady, comes to Fantasy Island, and she's pregnant, but she's not going to live to see her daughter grow up. There I am, hooker. And her daughter runs away from home as a teenager and becomes a prostitute, and she does this quantum leap back to the future thing and goes to save me, and chaos ensues.
Oh, my God.
And she gets kidnapped and put in hookerware
what
in the brothel.
What a deep story.
And then they auction me off to some guy named Lucky Eddie for $5,000. It's about human trafficking and
but your mother has a particular set of skills before you get sold as a hooker.
Tattoo, it is a very sad story. Right. Oh, no, boss, she's not going to live. Does she have to die, boss? Yes, it's there. And then he says, no, you must not change the future. No.
How old are you there?
Like 19, like just 19, like that morning.
So it's legal to say, again, you're a dish.
Yeah, I'm over 18. You're allowed to
you're
look at
dish.
Me there.
You're a dish.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm like playing 7.
If IMDb is to be believed, Michelle Pfeiffer was also in that episode.
Yes, it's the weirdest episode of Fantasy Island ever because you have Eve Plum playing my mother. We're the same age.
Right.
Wrong. Twisted. Okay. Because she's like 20 there. So, I like this one. The sneaky one. That's cute. So, yeah. So, she plays my mother and we get dressed
that's
in horrible hooker wear.
That's a payphone she's using, Roxy.
Right? I was
confused why she was on a wall.
What is this? Communicator.
You used to have to carry change, which is
look
metal
car,
money. It's like Venmo, but metal.
The brothel is supposed to be futuristic. But it looks like a Hampton Inn in New Jersey. So, I don't know what is going on. Oh, my God. I'm like naked. So,
this is the plot of Taken, by the way.
Yes.
I'm being sold. It's like awful. So we did this, and I was like freezing cold and hardly dressed.
And this was Aaron Spelling. Yeah, you're in a bikini.
I'm
in
like
a
not.
Bathing
I, every
suit.
Time I pulled it over my boobs, my crotch was out. If I covered my crotch, my boobs were. It was a nightmare. And
did you feel uncomfortable?
Really, really uncomfortable. And the body makeup was like the most I was wearing. I felt at least covered by the body makeup. And I had that little doily, and I'm wearing like that and high heels like all day. Now, to his credit, the guy who's the really creepy guy who buys me was like the nicest guy on the set.
See, it's just these people get typecast.
Because he's the one, the lecherous, pervert, and he was like the most polite, like, are you okay, and everything, like, yeah.
You have a very, you have a very Barbara Eden look to you as you got older. Did you ever meet Barbara Eden?
Yes, I've met Barbara Eden.
Can you tell us about
Barbara
that?
Eden. We've met several parties because my publicist Harlan Bull knows absolutely everyone. So
he
I
does.
Meet,
yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm in a show with Dawn Wells, who was on Gilligan's Island.
Oh, Marianne.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I did this show.
By the way,
I take
Marianne over Ginger.
Yeah, always. Me too. Mm-hmm. I was always a Marianne. Yeah.
Tell us about the show. Ginger,
yeah. So I get this call. we're doing all this nostalgia. You know who Mason Reese is? He was the little kid. They don't know. Oh, she knows.
Yep.
Underwood Deviled Ham. In the 70s, there were these commercials for Underwood Deviled Ham. This strange little boy is like, Underwood Deviled Ham. It's a bugger's bot. He was like so hysterical. And he was on all the talk shows. He was on like Mike Douglas like 20 times.
Oh,
there
my
he
God.
Is. And he was always on Mike Douglas. Oh, and he did that thing with Howard Cosell. Saturday Night with Howard Cosell. And Mason Reese. He was the co-host.
Right.
He was everywhere. He was everywhere, this kid.
So he was Justin Bieber.
Oh, God. Now I understand. Thank you for bringing this down for me, Matt.
Everybody was like, oh, Mason Reese. So he grows up, and I'd run into him in New York, and we had met. And then he called this guy's mutual friend of ours, said, this guy, Steve Wishnoff, and said, I want to be on TV. I think I want a show. Let me see what I can do, because he's written things, and he'd worked at TV Land. He writes this thing. He calls me and goes, do you want to be Mason Reese's ex-wife? I said, wait, I'm married to him? No, just divorced. Okay. And then he calls back, goes, okay, we're doing it. I got it. You're married again. Who am I married to? You're married to Aaron Murphy, who is Tabitha on Bewitched. He said, you've left him for a woman. And I said, yeah, but I know Aaron. She's hot. She's gorgeous. Everybody would leave everybody right. for Aaron. That's not a problem. And he said, okay, well, she's your wife. And then he calls back, perfect. Dawn Wells is your mom. And I'm like, okay, this is heaven already. This is like the most hysterical thing ever. And then we had the great search for my mother-in-law, for Tabitha's mom, and Michael Learned, the mother from the Waltons, consented.
Oh, my God.
The imperious, badass mother-in-law. And so we have this kooky show called Life Interrupted, and it's about Mason. This guy who's an ex-child star, but right. things have gone very wrong is what's happened in the show. And he's living in this awful apartment over the bar, and he's divorced, but we haven't split up the property of the bar yet, and so we're still fighting. And his mother-in-law is his landlord, and then I'm married to this beautiful woman, and I've been raising our son, and then we're trying to throw him a party. But oh, and then his friends show up, his friend Oliver, played by Robbie Rist. Because when you have Robbie Rist from the Brady Bunch,
wow.
you have to name him Oliver.
Of course, Cousin Oliver.
Brandon Cruz, Julie Dolan. Okay, everyone's Cousin in it. Oliver. And it's really, really a cute, nice sitcom about this very strange family. And will Mason get it together? And will we have a birthday party? And will he show up? And whatever will we do with him?
Where can we get the show?
And it is on YouTube, where it is in
On YouTube,
shows.
Ash.
There it is. And it's on YouTube, and there are all
I
these
speak
episodes.
YouTube.
And it's adorable. It has flashbacks and dream sequence and is really funny. And it keeps winning. So we submitted it for, like, you know, film festivals.
Right.
And then, like, won all of them because...
Congratulations.
It's actually right. funny and, like, a good show. And then he calls me and says, well, you know, the Emmys have a comedy short form category. You can be on a web series and be submitted for nomination for an Emmy. Well, I am now a member of the TV Academy, and when I go on my page, I pull up the it's voting time now. I have a stack of DVDs
right.
like, up to my neck. On the four-year consideration page is now my picture with four-year consideration for Best Actress Comedy Short.
Were you ever nominated wow. when you were in Little House?
No, I wasn't. That's what's
so
crazy.
So this could be it.
This is it. 7 years
at
Little House, I never get nominated. And, like, we never won anything. We won for, like, music and hair. Nobody liked us at the Emmys on Little House. So here I am a million years later. And I may indeed wind up on the ballot for being Mason Reese's ex-wife and kissing Tabitha.
Wow.
What a crazy... I feel like TV Junkies, this is right up your alley.
Yeah.
This
holy
is,
crap.
What an amalgamation of talent.
It's a really good talent. Show. I did good work. My friends have watched it going, that was pretty good. Yeah, you should
How
be
many
nominated.
Episodes? So, how many episodes?
It's six little episodes. It's on the thing. It's like 122 minutes or a bunch of little...
Right.
It's amazing because you watch it, you go, wait, this is like a real show. This is like good.
Well, and how much
and
fun is it
you,
then?
Michael Learned and Dawn Wells.
And if we grew up watching those shows to yes. see characters
right,
in these new roles.
And people are playing very different things. I mean, right. Michael Learned is she's not sweet.
So you're acting.
Acting! Yeah, Michael Learned's not that nice. She's kind of the rich mother-in-law's like, oh, you people, really? Yeah. So she's hilarious. I'm playing a totally nice person. I'm really nice. And then Mason's playing, he's a disaster. Dawn Wells, Marianne, she's kind of a lecherous old lady. She's sort of after the dishwasher.
Which is how we all pictured her.
Right. She's totally the hotsy mama. She's awesome.
Can I ask you?
Yeah.
Sorry. Yes, have you ever met Lucille Ball? I ask every legend this.
100 years ago, I did run into her in the restroom at that weird nightclub in the Valley played, what was that weird board game?
Ski ball?
It was hot in the 80s.
Those shuffleboard?
She loved board games. This was like a game.
Yes,
place?
Yeah,
oh.
It was when backgammon, when everybody was playing backgammon.
Oh my God, I love that backgammon.
Right. There was a nightclub where everybody played backgammon, wow. and she was there all the time. And I went to some party there, and I was in the ladies' room, and all of a sudden, it's Lucille.
Did you say hi to her?
No.
Did
I
she recognize
off.
You?
No.
Okay.
But
so
I did go to the toilet.
Okay.
With Lucille
All right. That's
back
awesome. I'll
that's...
take it. Thank you.
So you talked about Mason Reese's character in this being a
yes.
child star who's
yes.
gone wrong. And a lot of child stars have gone
yes.
off the rails. How was it growing up? How did you stay normal?
Very lucky. I was on a show that was cool to be on.
Right.
Well, actually, it was also not cool to be on. My friends would say, why can't you be in a good show like Joni Loves Chachi? Ugh. So that was
Aaron Moran.
And Aaron. Wonderful girl. Such a sweet girl.
Right.
She had really serious health problems, and that's the mm-hmm. thing. She'd had some financial issues, but she was starting to come back. She was married to this really nice guy, and they were taking care of his mom, and she got cancer. And that was the thing. She was so, though, out of the limelight for so long that when she died, people, oh, well.
Drugs.
Know, right. Yep. She must have OD'd.
Well, even
like,
Scott Baio said that. About
right,
her,
that, well, right. And even her friends went, oh,
so
what?
So people
first,
jumped to
was
conclusions
it drugs?
Like
and
we were talking
like, you
about.
Might want to wait for the coroner's report because right. she's sick. She's And I knew she'd been sick, and only a handful of people knew right. she was sick because she didn't want to worry people, so she didn't tell people.
Well,
she
we were
sick,
talking about that, how unfortunately now people just jump to conclusions
and,
as soon
and
as they
I wouldn't
anything.
Have known what it was. I would have gone, oh, wow, what happened? I had just done an autograph show with her. Right. And she was delightful. We did a thing up in Canada and everything. Very sweet girl. But that's the thing. She didn't tell anyone that she was sick because she didn't want them to worry, not realizing that they would immediately jump to something much worse by not telling
sure.
them. So there you go.
So you obviously turned out great. You were well adjusted. But a lot of people at that time, I mean, the cast of Different Strokes had their
that
had their
was
differences. Were
like
you aware of it going on?
On that set or something.
Was it clear? It's interesting. I know Corey Feldman has been very vocal about talking about the issues for child stars
it's
and the difficulty
true.
With parents.
He was sitting right here a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and it's heartbreaking. It's difficult. What was your experience with some of those people who've had their struggles?
Well, it is hard because, I mean, several things go wrong. I mean, Little House, thank heavens, we had a very supportive set. The people in the set were really cool. They were nice to us. We were held to a high work standard so we could look back and be proud of our work. I don't have to watch Little House and be embarrassed and go, oh, I was a dumb kid on the show. Mm-hmm. We were doing really good work on the show, and it's good episodes, good scripts. So that helps.
Sure.
We were held to a very high work ethic, so we really were working. We didn't have time to goof off. But one of the things that happens is you're a child and you're doing an adult's job. I was 12 before I got like famous. I don't know if I'd like been Nelly and gotten famous at 6. I mean, what would you're a kid, but you're doing it. You have an adult's responsibility.
Well, 12
is
not
so
old.
Young.
I mean, I think anyone under 18, 30,
yeah,
it's a challenge.
Yeah. Exactly. You see what happens even with grown-ups who go into TV and movies when they're 20. You're doing a job where you're responsible. I mean, I always felt bad for Melissa Gilbert. It's like she was 9 and responsible for the employment of like 150 people. And, you know, you're making this paycheck. You're doing all this work. You have to do it. You can't just come in and go, well, I'm a kid. I don't feel like working today. I think I'll have a tantrum. I need a nap. They're like, yeah, well, you're fired. You might get your... No, I mean, there were days on the set I was sick. I threw up on the director's shoes once. I was so sick. I was the flu or something. I lay down for a while, and then it was like, you better, because
right.
we got a thing to do.
Wow.
So, yeah, there were no sick days. It's not like that. You're pulled away from your friends a lot. Now, in Little House, we had a lot of other kids. Very helpful. Good group of kids to hang out with. I kept my old friends. A lot of people are pulled out of their school. They never see their friends again. They're out of their element. Mm-hmm. They're on a show where they're the only kid. They're surrounded by all grown-ups mm-hmm. all day, 24/7. Yeah, that gets weird. If you have a good teacher on the set and your parents pay attention, you can get a good education. But a lot of times you miss stuff that if you were in attendance, certain lectures, they're now doing a thing of helping kids who are missing things like chemistry lab and biology lab because they're not on the premises to like bring a trailer out.
Well, wouldn't it also be just the socialization of being around other kids, being
you're
a
not
kid.
Around them and people miss certain things. You get sort of old before your time. You're doing all these adult things, but you're also so sheltered sometimes you don't do other things. So you get these people who are like 40-year-old midgets on the one hand. They're like very old and they're like, because they've been working, and you know, I had a midlife crisis when I was 21. You know, right. It's like you already had this career, but you ask them about things that you and I would take for granted that people know, and they're like, what? Because they didn't do that. They never learned, and they're like 12 permanently. So that gets weird. And it depends on the parents. A lot of people steal their kids' money.
Yeah.
It's
that's
terrible.
What Corey was talking about.
It shouldn't be that they passed the Coogan Law, which should have stopped it cold. Coogan Law stopped a lot of it. Initially, that's the law named for Coogan, who lost all his money, where the money's supposed to part of it. But like this much of it goes into an account you get at 18. But not all of it. They couldn't siphon that off. Parents found ways to legally circumvent it. It also used to be you had to be a contract player. You had to have a contract. So if you did commercials or just episodic, you didn't have the account. And people found go-rounds and stole the kids' money.
Famously, this is exactly what happened to Gary Coleman. I mean,
yeah.
He's the worst case scenario of that.
And
happened.
Some of it was just like dumb. And I think Gary, because I did a thing on the Tonight Show with Gary and everybody talked about it. Some people, their parents went, oh, no, we're not stealing it. We have this great plan. We're going to invest it. My barber's cousin's girlfriend's friend says this is a good idea. Mm-hmm. And then the money goes bye-bye because they're naive and they don't know what to do and it's too much money. And there's parents who go crazy and just flat out steal the money. The parent's an alcoholic or a drug addict or a gambling addict. And, oh, the kid has a lot of money. Oh, well, that's gone. and terrible, terrible things happen, and the kid's very exploited. And sometimes they don't know. They literally, I know people who turned 18 and said, well, where's my trust fund? They went, you don't have one. And they thought they were waiting for that check because they thought they had it, and then nothing, gone.
Do you think that it is harder for child stars today, like the Lindsay Lohan, Shia LaBeoufs of the world, because of how out there everything is? Like,
yes.
Immediately on YouTube, you think they have it harder than you did?
Totally, because it's immediate. Okay, I was joking about this the other day. I said, back in my day, we had the National Enquirer. There was no TMZ, there was no, but there's the National Enquirer. The National Enquirer would find out terrible things about you, and you'd be drunk at a party, and they would go run it. But you had days before this ran. They had to put the paper to bed. It took them days to put it together. So your publicist and your lawyer and your manager could call the Enquirer, and if they could talk them out of it before, I think, Thursday at midnight, that paper wouldn't come out on Sunday. So you had like a week to like talk them out of it and save yourself. But TMZ and people with their phones, you fall down outside a nightclub, it's up before you hit the ground.
Or you tweet it yourself.
Or you tweet it yourself. And if you look, some of them, like I think about like Lohan and some of these people, it's like, wow, they all knew that she was going to that clothing store. She just miraculously happened to stop by and hold up the T-shirt for, oh, wait, yeah, she called them. And people sometimes are calling these people and doing setups. And at one point when they were talking about laws to better protect celebrities because it was getting out of control with the chasing, someone was on TV and he said, they're not following everyone. They're following seven people. And yeah, there's a certain group of people who are followed all the time, and some of them are capitalizing on that. Mm-hmm. They're sort of playing that and calling them. And then there's people who are just like, why are you on my lawn? Ah, yeah, where that they didn't ask for that. But it happens much faster. If you do something weird, everyone will know now. You will not have a week for your publicist to buy them a box of cigars and talk them into the
Can you tell us a little bit about like any parties that like the young stars would have? Was there any interaction with them outside of, I know we talked about like Patty McCormick, you met her or whatever, but like in general, like outside of your cast on Prairie.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, is what you wanted to do if you were a smart child star was, if there's going to be any drinking or carrying out, was to do it at home or at someone's house and have a party. That's why I'm always like these people out in the car and in the club. I'm like, get a limo, call a cab, Uber. Why are you driving? Oh, my God. And why are you out in the club? You don't have a house. You got a $10 million house. You could just have people over and fall down in your living room. And back in my day, we did our drinking in the living room. And literally, I remember there was a very crazy party. And it was Jill Whalen, as a matter of fact, was there. A bunch of people and a lot of young girls from a show. And I don't think we were doing anything horrible or illegal, but yeah, I think a couple people did fall down the back stairs, but nothing happened because everybody was there and they were in somebody's house and somebody picked them up and nobody took a picture and they got them a cup of coffee and put them to bed. And yeah, you know, regular people. Okay. So yeah, you can, you know, there's some of it is sheer insanity and some of it is like college. There's a lot of like college drinking amongst child stars. Right. It's like regular, stupid 19, 20-year-old stuff. But the thing is, sometimes it's like there's no limit. Some of these kids, so much money where, you know, you own a plane, you know, then what? You know, where is the no? And that's what I think Corey...
Well, people have to tell you yes because you are the cash cow.
And they're trying to get something out of you. Well, Corey has talked about, Corey Feldman talked about, he and Corey, it was like they weren't, nobody thought of them as children. It's like, well, they're famous and they're rich. Therefore, people were offering them sex, drugs, et cetera, because what? I remember, you know, Drew Barrymore, who's fine now. God. But you saw the articles. She was a very young girl. She was out at clubs, and they would say, like, she was dating. And I'm like, she's 11.
Right.
Why is she in a club with some 30-year-old guy drinking who decided that was cool? So, yeah.
And everyone just kind of looks the other way back then, it seems.
Right,
like.
And who was pouring the liquor in these clubs that these kids are going to? They weren't 20.
Well, they're thrilled to have her there, I'm sure.
Everyone, and that's what they did with all of these kids, and that's, you saw how it wound up. And so there's people who just decide you're not a child. And I remember my dad even would, like, jokingly say, oh, she's not a child, she's an actress. And, yeah, and there's people who say that quite seriously, and therefore there's no thought of that. The smart parents, the ones whose kids you see turn out okay, they're like, well, yeah, but you still have to go to school, and maybe you're going to college, and you're going to finish high school, and you're going to actually do homework, and you have a job to go to and things to do and you have to keep it together. So that's why there's a thing now called, there's a minor consideration that mm-hmm. Paul Peterson started trying to help some of the former ex-child stars that have issues. And then there's Looking Ahead through the Actors Fund, wonderful program, which is getting all these young kids now and going, and you're staying in school. We have mm-hmm. programs and parties where you can hang out with kids your age who are also in the business. We do charity work and volunteer work, and we have classes. And maybe you want to go to college, but what with working, you haven't had time to, like, look at colleges or apply. Maybe you haven't been taking the courses you need. You need someone to help you do that. And they help them out so that they can do normal stuff.
We were just talking earlier about Bachelor in Paradise, where it's kind of the opposite. Rather than trying to put people on the good path.
Yeah, that's like, here, let's ruin your life. So
think about it with this reality TV where people are and they're being put in the situation. And instead of hiding these things, as you said,
do it
at home behind closed doors. Yeah. You're doing it on camera.
Really, really. Okay, reality TV's kind of like screwed up in the first place. And I'm like, because it's you know, you have the things like not union. It's all weird. Mm-hmm. And you have people where there's no separation between character and it's not real. It's not real reality. You have people who are playing the villain in like a group situation, but they're not that person. There's mm-hmm. no script. So people go, they're awful because they're using their name and right. It's supposed to be them. So then how do you get? I met a guy in France. He had been on The Loft, which was a very big Big Brother French reality TV. It's huge in France. The Loft was terribly big, and he was the bad guy. He was a very good-looking, young, sexy man, and he had a notorious affair with in a pool. There was a swimming pool and a blonde woman and a whole thing, and they had wound up having, like, the scandal was sex on TV, and even in France, they were scandalized. It was that bad. And he was seen as no good. He dumped her for somebody else, was cheating, and he was terrible, and people hated him. And I met him. He came to my book signing in Paris and said, "Can you help me?" And he said, "Because you've done really well with this whole turning around, everyone hating you. I'm not that person. It was all staged.
Right.
She's a lovely girl. We're still friends. I like her very much. They told us to get in the pool.
Oh, wow.
This whole thing staged. I don't hate anyone. I wasn't cheating on my girlfriend. This is all made up.
Right.
All those terrible things I said and did, we were sitting around with the directors planning what would make a good episode. I'm not this heel, this cad who did all these things to women. None of this is real. And I can't walk down the street."
Wow.
So what did you say?
I said, well, writing a book is always helpful. I said, write a book.
Right.
I said, but yeah, you need to get out there on the interview shows so they can see you and start explaining this and be human. So they humanize yourself and write a book and talk about how that's not, I am this other person.
It must be hard though, because for you, legally, you could say that I'm not this person. But for him, if you're doing a reality
show. Right, if he's on the show at the time, that's him. And he was done at least. So I think he's been making some kind of comeback or something, but that's what was happening to people.
It's hard. I think people are tempted by fame. And you go on these reality shows, and for a lot of them, they know this is my chance to have my 15 minutes. And the only way to sustain it is to play up this character.
And I think to be really more outrageous. Be more outrageous than the other guy. And it's also, okay, it's one thing to try to get fame by acting or singing. You kind of have to actually do something, like write or act or sing.
Reality, have talent, is what you're saying, right?
And put in the effort. Actually. Right. But reality TV is kind of, I don't want to do that. I just want to show up and get the fame. Yeah. And so that's bound to lead, any get-rich-quick scheme leads to trouble. So
what's amazing to me is, you know, we've talked about your acting, your comedy, your advocacy.
Yeah.
And some of the things you've gone through, and particularly what you did in the Senate here in California, helping to eliminate, and what a difficult subject for you to talk about, molestation and incest.
It's so weird. I mean, you'd think it's a no-brainer that everybody would agree that sexually abusing children is bad, that it being a family member is worse, and that people should go to jail if they are convicted of such a thing. Weirdly, no. There are people who don't feel that way. And there's I think we knocked it down to under 30 states because National mm-hmm. Association to Protect Children was able to change laws in several states. We have all these people fighting all the child sexual abuse images, child porn stuff now, and the trafficking. There's so much stuff going on. But there's a law in many, many, many states that if someone sexually abuses a child, I mean, even when, and it like lists all the horrible things you can do in the law and the crime, it's like full-out rape, but they're related to the child in any way, they can qualify for a legal exception, the incest exception, where not only can they serve no jail time, but they can even get, in some cases, a thing called a deferred entry of judgment, where you have no record.
Oh.
Yeah.
So then you don't have to register.
What was the rationale?
No, register can open a daycare center a year later because you're, even if you, and it counts for multiple victims and continues to be an old, that's what got me in California. It was like, it lists all this horrible stuff and multiple victims and this, and you're going, whoa, dude. And then it says, this is a mandatory sentence unless the perpetrator is the child's parent, grandparent, blah, blah, blah.
It should be worse. The punishment should be worse.
In Canada, there's a thing called Breach of Trust Act that if it's the parent or someone assigned to take care of the kid, you get extra time. You're in more trouble.
Right.
But in the U.S., it's less.
And the thought was, we're doing a favor because we don't want to take this caregiver away from the child.
Right.
Even though it's keeping the monster next to the victim.
In reality, the kids were like, get him out of here. It was sometimes the mother would say, well, no, keep him here. But they, in fact, there was a case in Minnesota where sort of like the kid got outvoted. They were letting the guy go because they said, well, everyone in his family except one person wants him back in the house. Well, yes, his wife and the other kids wanted, but the girl he attacked was like, no, I really would rather he not be here. Thanks.
But this prompted you to share your own story.
It did, because we were changing these laws. I met with this group, Protect, and they were so amazing because they were doing stuff. They were getting stuff done. And in North Carolina and Illinois, they were making all this stuff happen. And they said, we're doing California. And I said, okay. And they said, you do not have to go public. But then when we went to the Public Safety Committee initially, they were like, no, we're keeping the law. And we're like, really? We said, we got to do something. So I wound up going on Larry King on CNN and talking about it. And then I said, okay, so if I talk about this, that I was sexually abused as a child, can I talk about the law? And they said, yes, you can. And we did. And we wound up with getting it out to the public. People called their representatives. They called their assembly members and the Senate members and told them, no, I want you to change this law. And so we reintroduced it and won.
What was that like going on the show with Larry King? Sharing a story, such a difficult story to share. And
it was much rougher than this.
Right.
But how
is that moment when you decide to go out there and to open yourself up in such an intimate, personal story and to share it? How is that moment when you're actually speaking these words, this truth out?
Well, I was very lucky. I mean, he was very nice, and we'd gone endlessly over everything with the producers mm-hmm. for like days in advance. Now we're going to talk about this. Can we talk about this? If we talk about this, can we talk about that? And around in circles. So like everything had been pre-digested in a way. My wonderful publicist was there at the time and was like ready to throw himself on the desk and like interrupt it if something went wrong. He was
sure.
going to dive onto the set. So I felt very safe. I had backup
mm-hmm.
and I had the team at Protect and lawyers and shrinks and police and like a backup team of people, like nothing terrible. I had a safety net.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't just by myself.
Right.
But yeah, it was really surreal. Because when you're abused as a child, and anyone who suffered child abuse, sexual, emotional, physical, knows this, knows this happens, you are told not to tell, usually on pain of death.
Mm-hmm.
You're told, don't tell, or I will kill you, or I will hurt you, or I will kill someone you know. I mean, the death threat is, like, first out the door.
Mm-hmm.
You are told, if you tell, the sky will fall, the earth will open up, you must never tell this. So to finally tell someone in a therapy session was a big deal. To tell people in group therapy was a big deal. To tell my closest friends was the thing. And to sit there and see it, hi, Larry, and tell Larry King.
Right.
Yeah, when you've been told your whole life you must never tell this. No, it's not exactly a walk in the park. It's not easy. And I don't totally, recommend jumping to Larry King. I have people say, I want to tell my story. And I say, well, have you told your husband? Have you told your closest friends? Have you told your therapist? No, but I thought I'd go public and go straight to TV. And I'm like, yeah, you probably want to rethink that.
Even if the perpetrator doesn't tell you, you better not tell anyone. You're so full of, like, shame that
yeah,
you're
not
going to say anything anyways.
Nobody's going to know about this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
so you were young. You were six?
Yeah.
When was the first time you talked about it or told someone?
21.
21.
Really?
So all the time you're on television, you're living with this.
Exactly. And that's what makes people nuts, is the holding it in and sitting there and going, I'm different. Can anyone tell? I know this thing. Do they know? Do they know that I know that they know that they know? Are people staring at me? You know, you're sitting there with this. People start having conversations about child abuse and you're like, yeah, anybody want anything from the vending machine? And you're like, it's just there hanging over you all the time. So in that sense, yes, when I went public, then I was kind of like, huh.
Right.
I feel much better now. on that sense, it was a relief because I was like, well, I guess I can't sit around and go, gosh, does anyone know now that that part's gone?
What first, when you're 21, what first made you tell your story?
Oh, I had to go to therapy. I was ill. I was just ill.
Yeah.
It was the stress. I was, you know, I said, you know, I've been on a show for all this time. Mm-hmm. I was finally now off a show and had like free time, which I had. What's free time? What's a vacation? I had been like working and had something to do all the time for years. And then suddenly I had all this like free time to think about things. And it just got to me. And I was a grown up. And, you know, you look at kids and go, wait, they're like this big. And it like sinks in.
Right.
Because when you're a kid, you're like, oh, yeah, this is normal. And then you grow up and go, what? So all of that began to sink in. It got really unpleasant. I was physically ill. I was really having horrible physical. I just felt terrible and depressed and awful. And luckily, I had the wherewithal to go, well, I think you're supposed to seek professional help when this happens. And I did. And really, when if you're out there and you're miserable and you're suffering, this is happening. Now there's a million places to call. You can call Child Help. Mm-hmm. They don't just take calls reporting kids. You can be an adult and call and say, I need to find help. RAIN. You have people like that. They're great.
I've done stuff with RAIN before.
There's
They're great.
People you can call and say, look, I call a hotline, say I need help. Mm-hmm. And there's so many support groups. There's you can get a professional therapist. There's a million support programs, 12-step type things, therapy. There's like a million things now, places to go. Get it out. Absolutely. Talk to someone who knows what they're doing and tell them what happened and get help because you shouldn't have to sit with that. It'll just eat you inside.
Did you self-medicate at all before you started? Did it manifest itself that way?
I know a lot of people go like, you know, straight to the heroin and I can see why. And
sure.
I know a lot of people do. Had they invented Xanax when I was 21? I don't think they had. And it was funny because I actually had a doctor said, oh, do you want Valium? And I said, you know, I have a feeling you could give me Valium. And then I would take all of the Valium.
Yeah.
So that's why I think you should give me a phone number of someone I should talk to before we go. So I was good. I mean, when I was really young, like literally like a kid, a teenager, I was experimenting with drugs and stuff because I was like, why not? So I see how, indeed, child stars and people are sexually abused, and if you have both going on at once,
and how I mean,
you
it's
just wind up, it's there. Right. It's too easy.
And it's like one in four or maybe even higher.
Oh,
I've experienced this.
Absolutely. And that's the and then it's too easy, especially if you're in a big city or if you're now in your small town and they got the opioids, OxyContin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a child actor where people are going cocaine and are like trays of drugs and you're abused and having all this PTSD and all of this anxiety, it's just too easy. So I'm not at all surprised when people wind up really messed up.
Did you ever put any of that anger into your character? Was some of it part of like a release and helpful to be able to be that bitchy character?
Massively. And I think that's probably why I wasn't self-medicating as hard as most of my friends, because I had an outlet. And it sounds crazy to say Nellie Olson saved my life, because people like, did Nellie save your life? And I'm like, oh, that sounds like a thing people say or cliche. And then I'm like, well, yeah, she kind of did, because I did get to go to work and scream and yell and throw things and be really, really angry and let stuff out and be just not have to put on a brave front and be nice and smile. I could go to work and be terrible and be miserable and depressed and angry and unhappy. And I was like, well, this is a pretty good deal. So you bet I did. Yeah, I let it out. I was like, well, I can.
Well, they say that a lot, that the comedians are really the tortured souls. Smiling on the outside.
Oh, the stories. Yeah, knowing comedians. Yeah, absolutely. Most stand-up comics have terrible stories. It's true.
So not only that, but you were also on the front lines of AIDS activism.
Right.
When people had no idea what AIDS was and the stigma.
I'm on the board of Protect still, and we're doing a really great – go to protect.org, by the way. Mm-hmm. That's our website. And we're doing a whole thing with veteran soldiers who have come back. It's called the Hero Corps, who may have been injured and need another job. We're putting them in a training program to help the Internet of Crimes Against Children Task Force. Those police departments help catch the predators and the child traffickers and the people with the child porn. And we've got the soldiers helping the cops, and it's amazing. So on the board of that, indeed, in 1986, well, Percival, who you love, Tracy, the actor who played Percival, was an amazing person, went public with his AIDS diagnosis at a time when nobody was doing that. And I got really weird phone calls like, oh my God, you kissed him on TV, do you have AIDS? Because nobody did, people didn't know anything then, so they did. And
somebody really called and asked you that?
Oh my God, my roommate's aunt called and said, has he been in the apartment? Has he used the bathroom? Like, panic stricken.
People didn't
bad.
Understand what AIDS
doorknobs.
Was.
Doorknobs. Right. You're going to get it off the doorknob. People freaked.
Yeah, people thought Linda Evans might have because she kissed Rock Hudson on Dynasty. Yeah. Yeah.
I called it being in the Linda Evans position. Yeah. Everybody was convinced that Linda Evans was going to get AIDS. And so I got a lot of that kind of thing. And so, but I went to AIDS Project Los Angeles and I took their hotline training. So I could, because all these, and then media, real media would say, well, you know, they would ask me about AIDS, but they were asking me like, as if I was a doctor or an epidemiologist. Well, right. Do you feel that the virus, I'm like, wait, what? So I took the training so I could at least give appropriate answers and have some, you know, give referrals to services and tell them, no, you don't get it off a doorknob and, you know, try to help people. And that worked out. I wound up working with several different AIDS agencies, including Tuesday's Child, which helped families of children with AIDS. Just last year, actually, I was out doing a benefit for AIDS Project of the Ozarks out in Missouri. Mm-hmm. Lovely group of people did their walk and did a show out there for them.
It's amazing to me when I look at the power of entertainment and entertainers to create real change and mm-hmm. awareness. And we look at things. I'm a doctor. I used to be in medicine and seeing how hard it is to educate people on it. Oh, and right. yet by having someone like Stephen Tracy, Rock Hudson, Magic Johnson, through athletes, through entertainers, through these people, or the power of TV shows to educate people and to create tolerance. Ellen DeGeneres coming out as a comedian. I think the power of entertainers to really educate people is remarkable.
It's crazy. Well, I said I'm in this weird position where they're shoving the mic in my face and saying, tell us about AIDS. Well, maybe if I here, can I look up the answer? So I, you know, took the training and went, okay, now I have. Well, now that you ask, I could hand them a brochure and say, well, actually, in 9 out of 10 cases, blah, 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 the virus and the retrovirus and the T cell. And I could answer the question because that's what they're asking. But yeah, as a doctor, you know, the Magic Johnson, the day that happened, mm-hmm. that was like the moon landing.
Yeah.
It was insane.
But so many basketball players, Charles Barkley said, I'm not going to play on the court with him.
Oh, my God.
I'm afraid that I'll catch
remember,
AIDS from
remember
him.
When he's bled on court when
yeah.
he came back?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
he went
oh my
nuts.
God. The world, everything stopped.
But when he announced it, it was so huge. Because I remember I had a lecture at a school the next day with a bunch of people were going mm-hmm. to speak at school. And literally the day before, we were saying, well, there's a disease. And it's called AIDS. And there's a virus, HIV. It's a human immunodeficiency virus. Blah, 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 blah. And then the next day, we walked and said, okay, y'all know Magic Johnson? Good. Okay, you know that thing that he has? Yeah, that's what we're talking about. It's yeah. called AIDS. So it's like skipped 45 minutes of the presentation right. to go, the thing Magic Johnson's sick with. Okay, so it's like, wow. I mean, it was night and day. It was so
but
weird.
It humanizes it. I think these people, they've known someone. They knew Nellie Olson. When you go on Larry King and share your story now, I think for a lot of people who've never experienced someone or who've known, right. been open with it.
And it's weird. And that's why people coming forward to say, I have AIDS, people come forward to talk about anything. It does suddenly they know someone. And that was the thing that was really weird when I was doing Larry King, because they asked me, I said, well, do you want other people on the show? Because we have a whole presentation. I can bring in the senator who will get the bill and the thing. And actually, the woman who produced the show said, and what show were they on? I said, oh, and she said, look, here's that. You're in everybody's living room.
Right.
These people you're talking about are yeah. all great, probably a great interview, but you're in their living room. They know you. They feel they know you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about this is a thing that you were there, it happened to you, you know why it's bad, you can explain why it's bad and why this law is important, they actually know you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're coming on. Okay. And it's true. And that's the thing. As crazy it seems, people who are famous, and when I see famous people who aren't speaking on something, I'm sort of, well, you could just run on TV and say, plant a tree, save puppies, clean water. I mean, anything.
Right.
Just go, adopt a pet. And, like,
using
run
your platform
away.
For good.
Right. Yeah.
So who do you like as entertainers now?
Oh, gosh. And, you know, TV Academy, so the stack of DVDs,
right.
so I'm now trying to watch.
You can announce your votes here.
Every
who you're voting for.
Show in the world
right.
and try to see them all. I went to go, when I was doing the SAG Awards voting, I went to watch one episode of everything until I got to Stranger Things and then had to watch like all 8.
Love
like,
Stranger
glued
Things.
To the set like this. And today I started watching some shows and then I put on this and I put on that and then I went, oh, what's this crazy thing, Haters Back Off with the crazy lady who does
the parody
Miranda
of...
Miranda Sings.
Apparently she was on... I don't know these things. I am old. Apparently she was on YouTube being Miranda Sings doing a parody of people who make bad YouTube videos.
Uh-huh.
And now she has an entire show where it's the girl and her whole family. And I started watching this and went, and wound up watching like three episodes because it was hysterical. In fact, well, the characters are so obnoxious you want to like reach for the TV and smack them in the face.
Right.
Which means they're doing, I can attest, they're doing a good job. If I want to punch them in the face, they must be good at what they're doing.
Who?
Yeah.
Right. Who else are the great bitches on TV today?
The great bitches. Well, I do feel sometimes when I watch Big Bang Theory that Sheldon is the Nellie Olson of the show.
Really?
Because
yes.
When he says really bitchy things to people, right. But they all still love him anyway, right. And still keep him around. So I was watching one of he's the Nellie Olson of this. This is great, you know. So yeah, I have lots of shows. I mean, I'm terrible. I watch cartoons. I watch The Simpsons still, and I watch Family Guy, and I watch all that. I watch a lot of things. You know, I watch the Sci-Fi Channel and Comedy Central and the Cartoon Channel and weird things. And I have Netflix and Amazon and all of these things. And I try to keep up, but there's like a million shows I literally have not seen yet.
That's what we're saying. It's so hard for entertainment now because there are a million choices to not only get people to tune in once, but to keep tuning in.
Kimmy Schmidt. I like Kimmy Schmidt.
Yeah.
So good.
That's great. I love Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I've got to ask, what do you think of the Kardashians?
See, there's guests I'm like, think of what they could do.
With their power, with their fame. You
right.
Mean.
If I was a Kardashian, I'd be like, well, today it'll be adopt a kitten. I would go out to do that. And then the next week it would be clean air. And then 2 weeks later it'd be puppies.
But then you might not be a Kardashian.
Right.
See, there. And is there attraction in their fans? Do they dig it that they're like, hi, we're rich and we're really into makeup and don't care about life or anything? Is that part of the deal that they're playing these? And I think again, it's fake. I mean, I don't know.
What do you think?
The opera in the library after work
what
or something.
What do you mean is fake?
I think they're putting it on.
Putting the show? You think the
I
show?
Don't think anybody's actually that dumb who can make that much money and have a successful show and then actually be that like
but
physically
isn't
stupid.
That a testament? isn't that a testament to human nature that we say we want to watch the kittens and the clean air, but we tune in to the sex and,
we say
and the backstabbing.
It's terrible, these shows that are so dumb, and we should have intelligent people on the television doing intelligent and meaningful things,
right.
And then they're watching the Kardashians. And I don't know, if they stopped and said, well, I'm going to read a book now, and I'm learning Latin and ancient Greek, and I'm off to the opera, would people tune in?
No.
No, they like it. And that's what I'm thinking. It's like, how do we know that these people are, and the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, maybe they're all geniuses, and this is part of the act, like how stupid can I act on this reality show because people dig this.
Well, it's just what you said about the French guy, I think, where they also know people don't want to see them go in there and quote Shakespeare. They want to see people have sex and betray each other.
And look at my butt. My butt. My butt is big. Is your butt big? My butt is big.
My butt
and
is
like a whole show
juicy,
about like the butt.
Good for you.
Can I just ask about a couple of people from the Partridge Family. Did you ever meet David Cassidy or Shirley Jones, Susan Day, Danny Bonaduce?
I met
any of them?
Everybody like once, but Danny and I, the Tonight Show did, when Jay Leno was on, did a marvelous thing called Hollywood Survivor. It was like 5 days of sketches where they sent up Survivor, and it went on and on and on.
Yes.
It went on for like weeks. We were on like everyone. And we had two teams, and my team was me, Gary Coleman, Don Wells, and Danny Bonaduce.
Wow.
And the opposing team was Florence Henderson, Charlene Tilton, Adam Rich, and Jerry Mathers.
Charlene Tilton.
Wow.
From Dallas.
And these were the two killer teams. And we had to do these, like, send a things like Hollywood based, and like, find the phone, call your agent, and like, stunts.
When
and
was
then
this?
Win a prize.
Wow.
Oh, gosh. Like, 2000, 2001.
Any memory of Florence that you can share with us?
Well, she almost won. It was down to her and Jerry. So Jerry was like a tiebreaker. So Jerry won. She was very competitive. Her and Charlene Tilton really got like so into it. They were like,
wait, so was this, I'm sorry, was this a sketch or did you guys actually compete?
Right. It's a sketch. Charlene even said that she was sitting up with her boyfriend going, okay, now tomorrow I have to go in and Don Wells and Allison have an alliance and I have to stop them and that Danny Bonaduce, and then her boyfriend said, honey, it's not a real game. There's no prize.
People get competitive on reality TV.
There is no prize. You're just doing a sketch about a game. You don't win anything. You get paid the same check for showing up if you do. What the hell are you doing? And she said, admitted that she'd like gone mad and was like really into the game. It got really crazy. We started out there and said, oh, we're probably going to have to script some of those for them. We had a long, they brought us in really early, thinking we'd have to rehearse. And when they saw how rapidly competitive we all were, they were like, oh, well, just turn them loose.
Right.
and we had so much fun. And Danny was delightful, because I always liked him best, actually, in the Partridge Family.
So was that was before Breaking Bonaducci.
Yeah. He had been like a mess, and then he'd gotten better, right. And he's doing this, and then he went, and then he did reality TV, and right. Look what happened, and look what happened.
But I think you know, that's
and
the
now
problem.
He's like better again. He's on the radio. Somewhere.
When the cameras are on you, mm-hmm. and you're like, how can I be entertaining? I think it's easier to be bad.
I think so. And there was a study out of England that apparently there's a rather high suicide rate for people who work in reality television, who appear
wow.
on it. And they were going mostly from the British shows. I don't know how many American shows included, but they went, okay, we had this many people on this many shows, and this many of them either committed suicide or attempted to commit suicide.
It's interesting. I think you can go from you go from a normal life
mm-hmm.
in middle America, and you can be on the cover of Us magazine and for 3 months have
be the most
millions
famous person
of people.
And money. And they make a lot of money. And it's like, and then what? And it's a weird fame because what are you famous for? You're famous for something negative and yeah.
Some of them make no money and they're just like disasters, which is even worse.
That's, yeah, really scary.
I know this might fall into the category of me thinking that all famous people know each other because
I noticed that seems to be a theme
well,
here.
Well, yeah, totally. Because he was
it's
on
like
air
Canadians.
Before you and he was yeah. way older than you. But I have to ask about Adam West. Did you know him at all?
We had the same agent when I was a little girl.
Wow.
So I didn't get to hang out with him because, yeah, he was busy doing Batman and was grown
right.
up. But it was really funny because my old agent, Lou Sherrill, who was out of a movie. He was like the agent you want to have. He had the white shoes and the white belt and the gold pinky ring with the diamond
wow.
and a cigar and like the whole bit and a Rolls. And he was, yeah, he was out of a movie. And
oh
indeed, he was Adam West's agent as well. So I had Batman's agent.
Wow.
It was very
So
proud.
What about, who were the famous people
I
you...
know little Catwomen, though. That's who I know. I don't,
Julie
Newmar, because yeah. the Harlem Nipples, so I've hung out with
well,
Julie Newmar.
And you were friends with Tippi Hedren.
Yes.
You had a great photo with Tippi.
And Carol Channing.
And Carol Channing.
I'm buddies with all the fabulous old Hollywood. And Rose Marie, who I was just saying, she's on Twitter, and Carol's on Facebook. And I was saying, okay, if obviously you're not someone who's going to be sitting there actually doing this, but you have a guy, you have a publicist, you have an assistant, someone who's doing it. So Carol can say,
right.
oh, how many likes did I get? Was it good? Could you go look at it for me? So, you know.
I have a feeling though, Shatner's actually doing
it. No, Shatner's doing it. Shatner's like, hey, one second. Shatner is on the phone. He is doing it right now.
Computer,
he's doing it.
Send a tweet. Tell Nellie Olson, happy birthday.
Were you a fan of David Cassidy? Like, I mean, all the girls were at the time. Like,
no, I liked Danny Bonaducci. I liked the goofy redhead kid. Who was
this
the
is
funny
Ginger
one.
Marianne back then, right? For the women,
yeah.
right?
All the girls liked David Cassidy, and I never liked that type. I thought they
wow.
were wussy. I thought Danny.
Wait, I was like, what about Scott Baio?
Ugh.
Really?
I never
Interesting.
Liked it. I had a bunch of friends. Okay, tell you
what.
Wait,
you said Henry Winkler was the Fonz? Was he the man?
He was cool because he's a Yale graduate, intelligent, lovely, yeah. well-spoken man. In person, the Fonz. my era tells you, when I was in high school, a whole bunch of my friends really loved the Bay City Rollers.
Mm-hmm. S-A-T-U-R-D-A-Y, night.
And I was like, no. So I never liked any. I mean, when I was six, I dug the Monkees, but I was six.
Oh.
But after that, I was like, no. I never
Sean's
liked any
getting
of
fired
those
up.
I liked Danny Bonaducci. Now, I did, I mean, the Fonzie type, indeed. I mean, later when Rocky came out, I liked Sylvester Stallone. But then I liked people like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. And then for his musicians, I was a punk. I like Johnny Rotten. I like John Lydon and the Sex Pistols. That's why I like. I thought Joe
like,
Strummer and the Clash.
Right.
Like them.
They seem like they would be Nellie Olson's type for sure.
Right? Sex Doesn't Pistols. That make way yeah. more sense? See there. No, I wasn't into David Cassidy. I was way more into like Joe Strummer. Yeah.
So who did you want to meet back then?
Who did I want to meet? Anybody in any punk band, and every now and then I meet a few because I did hang out at the Whiskey, so every now and then I meet a few people. Who I like from TV that I want to meet then? It's so funny. I liked game show hosts, which is like wacky. And I did. I met this guy. There was a guy. What was it? Oh,
Wink
gosh.
Martindale.
Treasure Hunt. Who had Treasure Hunt?
Treasure Hunt.
Because he was mean to the contestants.
Oh, was he?
And I thought he was hysterical. He would like torture people. They'd
right.
have all these prizes. And
Kenneth
he'd go,
Kendall?
That sounded.
Or Mark Fear?
And he would. They bring out the box. I mean, it was like the 70s. And they bring out the boxes.
Either,
and he'd go.
Jeff Edwards or Jan Murray. Oh, Jeff Edwards would have been in the 70s.
And that may be the guy, because he would bring out the boxes and say, right. You, are you sure? Are you sure? Right. And they go, I want this one. You have one. Oh, and he'd actually hit, you have one. Oh, it's a set of pot holders. And then they'd be crying, and he'd go, wait, there's something under the pot holders. It's a trip to Hawaii. And he would just drag this out. And it was torturous. He was really awful to people. And I got to meet him at a charity event.
God, I love game shows.
I was so
shows.
Happy, because he was cool.
I remember Sale of the Century. That was one of the things where they flipped around, you win, and they flipped around lamps. And I always felt like that's one of those lessons in life. Sometimes you think you're going to win something big.
Door number one.
Lamps.
Yes.
That's what you get. And you got to pretend to be excited about it. By the way, I host reality television, in full disclosure, and I was on Celebrity Apprentice. So
I
host American Ninja Warrior, which is so
it's
not quite
won
as
Celebrity Apprentice.
Right, I won Celebrity.
You won.
Winner. Right.
So actually, you were mentioning. So for me, I grew up. Arnold Schwarzenegger was it, and he hosted the most recent season of Celebrity Apprentice.
I met him at the Special Olympics. All of us celebrities would go help out Special Olympics.
Another guy who's done amazing advocacy and good things.
He signed our bill in Sacramento when he was governor. He signed our bill that Protect passed.
He's been an amazing guy and still active, but I was at a party at his house a week ago. I was doing an auction or 2 weeks ago, and Stallone was there, and I heard you guys just ran into Stallone. Schwarzenegger and Stallone together.
Oh, my God, that'd be perfect.
My 16-year-old me was exploding.
Oh, my God.
Look at him there.
I was standing around, and this was early. Schwarzenegger wasn't Schwarzenegger yet. I mean, Stay Hungry. He was like Conan, I think, still. He wasn't like...
It's like 83, just, 82, 83.
And so this was like, God, just 82. Maybe. Right. It was really early.
Right.
But he was at the Special Olympics of Celebrities, and we were standing around, and I sort of knew who he was, kind of like, oh, that's the guy. And we're standing there, and we sort of look at each other, look around, and he looks at me, and he looks at my legs and the shorts, and look at him, and I look at his legs, and he turns to me and says, you and I are the only ones here without a tan. Pasty white.
Well, Schwarzenegger was known as a ladies' man. He might have been making a play on Nelly.
That could have been.
I saw you on Fantasy Island.
Yes.
Right? I would have been for you.
I gotta quickly ask: did you ever meet Mary Tyler Moore?
Yes, I did. I met Mary Tyler Moore at a party. I have a fabulous photo of the two of us together when I was very young. One of my first Hollywood parties.
Really?
She was there. She was lovely.
Wow. What about Dick Van Dyke? I mean, obviously.
Yes, and he was at parties, and he also used to hang out at Schwab's on Sunset.
Schwab's on Sunset.
And I lived in the neighborhood, and it was like, you know, can I have one of your fries? Yeah, I mean, he would hang out at the counter eating and talk to everyone. You could hang out and have fries.
Didn't everybody go to Schwab's back then?
They did. They did. And you could have fries with Dick Van Dyke.
I feel like it was the same with TV shows. There were only a few places everybody went.
It's true.
And it would be all this. I mean, maybe it's just this is what we think, but they have the photos and it's like everybody famous together.
Well, they did because, like I said, there were the charity events. You did Toys for Tots.
Right.
You went to Toys for Tots. You brought the Drap toy, Toy, and the Marines, and Hobo Kelly, and the thing, and the baby. So everybody, there's Lonnie Anderson. There's Eric Estrada. So you went to that. Oh, I did the roller boogie episode of Chips where from Todd Bridges to Lonnie Anderson to everyone in the world. Go look it up. Everyone's in that episode. Everybody. So I was in that. I was in the roller rink Chips episode. And then, you do the parades and you do the charity events, and then they'd have the end of the year network prize. So at some point, you would be in a room with everybody.
It's funny. We're all in entertainment, not to the level you are, but I feel like we're fans, which is why we always play this celebrity, who do you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, to me, it's one of those things, like when I'm on Twitter and some people love the show and to me, like you're very gracious interacting with the fans, but I always think back like $6 Million Man. And if I had had Twitter as a kid and could have said something and Steve Austin, Lee Majors would have replied, I would have been like, how amazing is it to me that people can reach out, like you talked about with National Enquirer, the lead time of mailing a letter
and who knows
if they answer it, but with Twitter, to see
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I do. I'm talking directly to my fans, and it's very weird. And these are people. They're in Minnesota. They're in Kansas. They're on the prairie, and they normally would not be like, hey, Allison, I saw the picture of your cat. I have a black cat too. What are you?
Oh my God!
Wouldn't be doing.
You know what's awesome though is it seems you've been in this since you were a child. And you're not jaded. You still appreciate it. You appreciate the people who are fans of you. Yeah, but I think it's so great that you can retain that because I see people who get jaded by the business. What else? Promote.
So we promoted the show.
Life Interrupted,
that's right.
And it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Go on YouTube and make sure you like it and subscribe.
Yes.
And
comment.
If you are a Television Academy member.
Vote.
Don Wells is nominated. I am nominated. I will be voting. The show is nominated, and Michael Lerner.
Forget
is nominated.
Don Wells. We love her, but you're here, Allison.
My husband's in a band. My husband Bob is in a band called Catahoula, and he plays guitar.
Where are they really playing? Great. Are they playing,
actually,
or are we just going to get their music
are.
Here? Where are they playing?
I have the CDs. They are on July 8th. They're going to be at Viva Cantina at 900 West Riverside Drive in Burbank. And they're really very good. If you like, do you like Fleetwood Mac?
Oh, yes.
Do you like Heart?
Does anybody like
Heart? What About Love?
Merged and went to Mardi Gras.
Right.
Do you like Little Feet? Do you remember the band Little Feet? The sort of that Mardi Gras thing. It's very like that. If you like that, you would like them. They're very good.
Are you doing 5 minutes of French comedy to open up?
I would, but I'm going to be at Comic Con in freaking Omaha that weekend.
Really?
Doing a huge event. And and I got excited because the guy who did the voice of Pinky from Pinky and the Brain is going to be there. So I'm all jazzed.
So are you there as Nelly?
Well,
at Comic Con,
right, I now have stuff to sign, and then I'm going to South Dakota to Smet, which is one of the real prairie places, and they're having Laura Ingalls' 150th birthday.
Anyone else from the show going to be there?
Yes, Dean Butler, who's Almanzo. It's a twofer.
Wow.
You get Almanzo.
Hey, Half Pint.
Right, and we do stuff together.
He had great hair.
Miss Beadle, you have to have Miss Beadle on. Charlotte Stewart, she has a book. She's amazing, and she was Jim Morrison's. Friends with benefits, kind of.
Hey-o! We can say it now, right?
Jim Morrison, totally. And then this is coming up next week on the 24th, June 24th, Saturday afternoon, if you're in Hollywood, at it's the Hollywood Women's Club right there on La Brea. It's a fabulous old historic building. I am hosting this with these two other speakers. It's called The Indomitable Spirit. We're talking about, like, the child abuse thing and the AIDS thing. I do a lot of stuff and a lot of speaking about getting better and me and some friends got together, and so a Peterson production of Loose Ground present. We have this thing now called The Indomitable Spirit, and it's online as a website. And we're getting all these speakers who survived unbelievable stuff, people who had cancer, people who were abused as children, AIDS. My friend Steve Peters, who was diagnosed with AIDS like a really long time ago, and he's still alive. And Jody was supposed to die. She had a stroke. But they're all leading these amazing lives and talking about what they're doing and are happy. So we're finding all these speakers who've overcome overwhelming
odds
to lead happy, full lives. And they're all speaking. And so now on the 24th,
You're a Hollywood star who's got such a big heart.
But come you can get tickets online. It's June 24th. And we have T-shirts. And
where do we find you on social media?
God, everywhere. Okay, so I'm on Facebook. I'm Allison Arngrim, and there's an Allison Arngrim fan page, and then there's just Allison Arngrim.
And Twitter, the blue check?
Twitter, it's blue check, at Arngrim, just A-R-N-G-R-I-M. I'm on Twitter, you can tell, because Shatner's following me. And and I'm on Instagram, and I'm Allison Arngrim there. And hell,
you
I'm
do
on
your
LinkedIn.
Own social media.
Hell yes, and I set up my own YouTube channel.
Good girl.
And I'm everywhere, and I have a website, which is bonnetheads.com. Because, like Trekkies, our prairie fans, we call them bonnetheads.
I love it.
I'm everywhere.
Before we let you go, you, of course, are recovering. You know, you're not the bitch anymore. People like you now. People
hate you.
So because of the reason that people used to hate you, do you stay out of talking about politics at all? Is it something that's worth staying away from for that reason?
I don't know. I mean, they're going to hate me anyway. Generally, though, with politics, I try to go, I mean, stuff that I can do something about. What I'm always ragging on people for is, did you vote?
Right.
Are you registered to vote?
Right.
Do you vote in the midterms? Do you vote in the small elections? Everybody wants to vote for president, but your local city council, your county supervisor, and your state assembly person, state senator, is going to have way more impact on your day-to-day existence than even the president. So I tell people to get, you know, register to vote. I registered when I was 18. I have not missed an election in the entire time.
Well, neither that. You've helped make law. You've helped change law.
And I've helped make law because of protecting children. So, know your stuff. Know your actual issues. There's lots of back and forth on Twitter about who people like and don't like.
Mm-hmm.
This person is objectionable. This person is this. I hate them. I hate them. Yes, but what policies do you want to see in effect or not? And I'm all about that, and that's why Protect. It's like, we're totally bipartisan. We have gotten really chummy with Democrats and Republicans, and we've also, like, gotten on the phone and said, call this person, they're horrible, and made their lives hell, and we didn't care which party they were at.
Right.
Because we're about, you're going to pass this law that is going to protect children, and we don't really care which side of the aisle you're on.
Yeah,
so,
it doesn't seem like a partisan issue.
It shouldn't be. I mean, and sometimes it is. We'll go into one state, and it's all the Dems. So we go to the next state, and it's all the Republicans. We're like, do you guys talk to each other?
Yeah. How is it?
So, I generally... Politicians are a weird breed to begin with, but there are some people out there doing some really good stuff. But go on, there's a whole thing, like there's like Smart Voter and all these websites. Go online and actually look up what your candidate is doing. Look up what bills they actually voted for. What did they actually vote against? What did they actually do? People go on Twitter and on TV commercials and say, I'm for this, I'm for that. Right. And then you like look them up and they didn't actually do any of it.
And do charity. Help people locally.
Help. Try not to be a waste of oxygen.
what perfect words to close
you're
on.
You're here.
Don't be a waste
that
of
sounds
oxygen.
Like reality TV
space.
Right there. Always.
Do
right?
something to help other people.
Well, yeah. Allison, thank you.
June 24th. Go to my Facebook. Go to
Life
the
Interrupted.
And
at
go
Arngrim.
Watch Life Interrupted. Life Interrupted at Arngrim on Twitter. Thank you. Yes.
For the crew of The Tomorrow Show, we're signing off. This is Matt Eisman saying good night.
Thanks for tuning in to The Tomorrow Show with Kevin Undergaro. For guest bookings, questions, or comments, you can email us at info@thetomorrowshow.com. Be sure to follow us on social media and tell a friend about the show. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, your voice of tomorrow, wishing you a better one.